All right. What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the 19th episode of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. I hope everyone had a happy Mother's Day out there in the horror community. Again, welcome to the 19th episode of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy, aka NES Rule 22, as always, joined by my co host, JP, aka Double Shot J, and the man himself, Mood 616. Got a full show for you guys. Of course, we'll be talking about the news with good old JP. Hopping into this week's Mood Swings question, which is the top five favorite found footage films. And then I guess we'll be answering your guys' questions. Anyone has any questions this week?
I don't think we had any questions.
Alrighty. So I guess we'll be hopping into Mood Swings if he has anything to say. And then hop into the what we watched. And then we'll be hopping into a discussion on Deadly Shadows. Right? Dead Shadows?
Dead Shadows.
Dead Shadows. So go ahead, JP, the news.
Yeah.
All right, so first up we have Clive Barker, who did the Books of Blood. I guess those was his short story compilations. I've never read any Clive Barker at all, so I'm completely unfamiliar with his work. But one of his stories from the Book of Blood, Volume 2, which is Jacqueline S., is going to be filmed. It's expected to begin filming this fall. Clive Barker revealed the director Jovanka Vukovic is making her feature film directorial debut. And this story follows a beautiful woman who has the ability to horrifically change people's body shapes simply with her mind. This ability gives her the power to grant men the ultimate sexual experience and, proves fatal. It's a story of sex, power, and the extremes that await us at the limits of desire. Sounds, directly like a Clive Barker type thing to me.
I think that has potential to actually be pretty damn cool.
Yeah,
it's original
cool.
as hell. I've never really heard anything like that besides, maybe like Hellraiser, which is, vaguely similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it could be super sick, man. I mean,
directed by a woman.
Yeah, I mean, that's super cool, man. But I like that concept of being able to change. You said to change other people's bodies and stuff?
Yeah, with her mind. So she
with her mind, so yeah.
Like the physical appearance of their body and like morph the body shapes. Like,
yeah, that's a deadly weapon, man. If you're doing that with your mind, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's hard to defend against. Like, how do you... That's a really interesting idea.
Yeah, I'm surprised I've actually never really heard of this. I mean, those books are pretty old, right? The Books of Blood.
Yeah, yeah.
That Clive Barker wrote. Have you read any of those?
I have actually not read any of those. I've always wanted to, actually, so maybe I'll write it down, something to pick up.
Yeah, I did read, maybe a chapter of Hellbound Heart, but I've never, had the chance to, go through and actually read that, but... Clive Barker, man, that dude has some of the craziest visions,
They're all fucking awesome.
Yeah, I know. It really is a natural resource of horror that we don't get too often. He's a rare breed.
Oh yeah.
He's a precious natural resource, which is just pure
horror, awesomeness.
Just horror. And I love Clive Barker. Dude, he's brought us some of the best stuff out there. After that, a trailer for the documentary Leviathan, the story of Hellraiser 1 and 2 trailer was, I guess, revealed. And, there's no official release date on this film. Sometime next year, I guess. I don't know if it's playing at Cannes or whatever, but I watched the trailer and honestly, it doesn't look to the quality of Elm Street Legacy or Crystal Lake Memories or even 25 Years of Terror, but it should be interesting to just, learn a little bit more about the history of Hellraiser 1 and 2. Little bummed they didn't do the whole franchise, even though there's not much to say. I think it would make for some very funny moments talking about the later sequels.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to hear them talk about Hell World, man.
Yeah, I would. I think it'd be so interesting to hear those stories and just to hear it right out of their mouth saying, the original script for Hellworld wasn't actually intended to be a Hellraiser film.
Yeah, we just sprinkled Pinhead and his Cenobites in the script. Like, I would love to hear all that backstory about, like, you know, the financial stuff and all the legal stuff on why they had to do that and the decisions and thought process behind doing that and stuff. I think that that would be almost a more interesting documentary than the stuff that you can just see on, you know, Hellraiser bonus mm-hmm. disc, you know? Yeah. But, you know, I'm surely going to pick it up, you know. I revisited Hellraiser recently, and I think I have to probably take back a little bit of what I said about it being slightly overrated. It's a pretty damn strong story, so I'm going to have to eat my words on that one.
Oh, I could see that coming. My way. You know what's funny? I actually watched Hellraiser not too long ago again also. And that movie's really, it's just good.
Yeah,
it's
so yeah good. It really, you
know,
is, man.
It really is. Yeah. Man. Like, I don't know, man. I always thought it was so interesting. You said it was overrated. I'm just like, I couldn't see it being overrated because it's a pretty cool and unique idea, right?
Yeah, it really is. And mainly what I was thinking of was, I hadn't seen it for a while at that time, and I was thinking back, and I was like, I remember this story seemed a little, like, kind of, not perfectly told, and you know, it kind of, that was the one thing that stuck out to me, and I totally forgot about just the crazy imagery and like how original everything was. I still do think, you know, Hellraiser 2 is the stronger film, and I think that's also what I was getting at, as like Hellraiser 1 is slightly overrated considering how good Hellraiser 2 is. I think that was part of it also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I do actually prefer Hellraiser 2 over the first one also, but I mean, not to take anything away from the first one. It's brilliant, but, you know, I do like the second one more, too.
Yeah, somewhere out there, Clive Craven is smiling.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
that's brutal. Okay, so after that, this would have been news, like, a couple days ago, but it's not really news anymore because it already happened. But there was a special marathon on the El Rey network, and there was a new program that I guess they're doing. I guess it was like an hour long. It was called The Director's Chair, where they take a director and they kind of interview him, and then they marathon his films afterwards. And the first episode of this was John Carpenter. So Robert Rodriguez like sat down with John Carpenter and, you know, interviewed him about his career and all that stuff. And then afterwards they showed like The Fog and Assault on Precinct 13, Escape from New York. And then they re-aired Director's Chair and then replayed that again. But that premiered May 10th at 1 p.m. Eastern. And I totally fucking missed it. I totally just forgot about it. I was bummed, man.
Yeah. Especially being John Carpenter too, right?
Yeah. El Rey Network is doing some big things, man. This is like the home for like genre fans right now, and it just sucks that not a lot of people know about it still. Not a lot of people are aware that like it's out there.
Yeah, I mean, especially up here, nobody knows about it because we just simply don't get it up here. So it's kind of unfortunate, man. I think I would actually, you know, go back to watching a little bit of TV. I mean, I generally don't watch any TV,
and that's my issue too. That's my issue too.
So,
but this when I do turn on the TV and it's not sports, it's not MMA or hockey or, you know, the NFL, I do flip it to El Rey because that's the channel that I like the most right now. There's always some either, you know, grindhousey exploitation film or a solid, you know, classic horror film or, you know, just something cool. It really is a cool station. And I love the idea of doing like a whole day called, you know, Carpenterror, you know? Yeah.
So I know we talked about this before, but I don't know if it's been brought up since you've been actually watching the network, but are the movies uncut on the network?
I actually don't even know, because I never, you know, actually sat down and watched a full movie on there. I would just, you know, leave it on in the background, so I never really noticed, but that is a good question. I would have to assume not, just because it seems like more of a...
Yeah, I wasn't, you know, like... but. Yeah, so they don't have like swearing.
It's probably like a chiller channel.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's not in HD, which is a little annoying, but yeah, totally El Rey. Everybody should support this if you have it in your area. You know, even social media, you know, tweet them, you know, share their stuff on Facebook. That always helps.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, after that, we have a director for Insidious 3. Obviously, it's not James Wan. But I do like what they did. If they're not going to pick James Wan, this is a good guy to go to. It's I don't know his actual name, but he is the writer. He was the co-writer of Insidious 1 and 2, and he also played Specs in the film. He was one of the, you know, like ghost hunter type guys. The paranormal investigators, whatever that title is. Yeah, he was one of those guys. So he's going to be writing Insidious Chapter 3 and directing it. So, you know, it's in good hands. Somebody who's been with it since, you know, day one. Kind of like B.J. McDonald a little bit in Hatchet 3. You know, he was there from the beginning. Steady cam operator guy or whatever he was. I can't really remember.
Once again, I think every time we talk about Insidious, I always have to say, well, I still need to see the sequel.
Yeah, I know.
But I just throw that in there.
The sequel, you know, going back to when I mentioned it on the show, it is the prime reason that I stopped watching trailers now, because I felt like the trailer for Insidious 2 gave away all of the big moments in the film and really, really, really made it kind of lackluster when I was watching it. I was really bummed out by that. So I'm done with trailers.
Yeah, that is such a disappointment, man. When you watch a trailer and it just exposes all the good shit from the film. Like, honestly, who's cutting these fucking trailers together? Like, how can that even, like, how could you allow that to get out there? I mean, that's just...
Do you know what? Cool, I actually, speaking of this is interesting. I was just listening to, I don't know if it was a podcast or an interview or something, but it was with a guy who actually cut trailers. Like, that was his, you know, that's his job. He cuts trailers. Yeah. And he'd been around since, you know, the 80s, you know, probably even earlier. And I think it was the guy who directed Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, actually.
Well, that's such a great film for your... But,
that's awesome. Yeah, and by the way, I directed Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2.
That's like saying I directed Hell... It's like I directed Hellraiser or Hellworld. It's like, what do you fucking do?
So yeah, he was saying that, you know, back then you would, you know, not give away too much, but now the whole idea behind trailers have changed, where they're, you know, testing them in front of audiences, and, you know, the same people are seeing them over and over again, so they get bored by them if they don't, so they have to keep making all kind of different trailers with more footage, with more, you know, punchlines and you know, money shots and stuff. So it really is just that, you know, times have changed, and the way we market films is so different that you almost have to do that to even get your film, you know, noticed by the, you know, distributors and all those different key things that you need, which sucks. Because if you go back and look at, like, some of the best trailers, they show you, like, nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the way trailers should be, man.
Yeah.
You know, it gives
I hate watching trailers these days, because, like, you see the whole fucking movie.
Oh, yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. You know, thinking back at some, like, that's like a whole show topic in general, like your favorite trailers or whatever. I remember, like, you know, even like the
that's Friday, a good mood swing.
Part 9 trailer, or not 9, 8, part 8 trailer, the New York one, you know, Jason Takes Manhattan, that trailer was awesome. Freddy's Dead had a decent trailer. The movie sucked, but, you know, the trailers were good. Texas Chainsaw 3 has an awesome trailer. So, yeah, trailers, man. Shorten them. Make them, you know, don't show so much anymore. I'm done with them. I'll watch it if it's something stupid like Sharknado 5 or something. I'll watch that trailer. But if it's like a movie I actually want to see, I don't watch the trailers anymore.
Did you guys actually watch the Wolf Cop official theatrical trailer that I posted in the group?
No.
It looks, man, it's like so different than like the teaser trailer. I thought actually showed more than the actual theatrical trailer for it. It was kind of weird actually, but it just basically kind of gives you, you know, it's more about, you know, the actual cop and stuff. And in the teaser trailer, it was just, I think it was just like the bigger scenes, you know, like the gory scenes and shit like that. But I can't fucking wait for that movie. It's going to be awesome.
All right. After that, the Stand remake is moving forward. We have Josh Boone directing. It's produced by CBS Films and WB. Now, this shit has been in development hell for years, and I guess it's finally moving forward. And you know what? I actually recently watched The Stand a few months ago for the first time, and honestly, I think a remake actually can work with this one, because it's pretty dated, dude. When you watch it now, it's pretty tame. It seems like there's a lot of hardcore stuff there that they just couldn't do on TV back then. And
but is this going to be a TV updated or?
Version? I think it's going to be an actual film, so okay. I don't know about that. I'm not sure.
I was flipping through the channels tonight. I saw the Rosemary's Baby show started.
Yeah, I meant to record that, but I forgot.
Yeah. Anyway. Hmm.
So if this is going to be an actual film, then that's actually pretty exciting, though.
Mm. Yeah. But can you really do a film? That's a long story, dude. And even the TV show didn't touch like all of the things that I think was supposed to be there. It feels like there was much more to be told when you watch the miniseries.
Yeah, I would assume it's probably just going to be maybe a little longer film, but just, I guess, just really kind of condensed. I don't know.
I don't know how more you can condense it. There's a lot of characters and there's a lot of... And completely. Even, like I said, watching the miniseries, it feels like some of the characters are just brushed by because of time issues. I remember saying that in my review of The Stand.
Yeah. It's been so long since I've watched that movie. Like, I actually really don't even remember it that much. It's kind of sad.
It's kind of a bit dated, to be honest. So yeah, I'm not totally against the remake because even the Stand TV miniseries, it's not like by any means like flawless. There's some issues there that definitely could be tightened up, and you know, it's not one of those films that is like perfect that you shouldn't touch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, Hannibal season 3 is happening. I guess the ratings weren't like super awesome like they wanted them to be, but they're still going ahead with a third season of Hannibal. It got greenlit, so NBC is, you know, moving forward with another season of Hannibal, which there's a lot of people who really like this show.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about it, I think, last week, and I think even people were giving feedback saying, yeah, it's really good. I think that's just so surprising to me that it's actually
it really
that
is.
Good on TV. Because I just
don't even like Hannibal that much. Like the film series, the franchise. Like I'm not like huge into it. Like Silence of the Lambs is a damn good film, but I'm not like as passionate about the series as a lot of people are.
Yeah, I like the movies. I really kind of prefer like Manhunter is actually like my favorite one.
I've actually not even seen that, so.
So, but yeah, I mean, there are a lot overall, like the best films in the world. Like Silence of the Lambs, I think is brilliant, but yeah, I just thought like the whole concept for Hannibal, for, you know, being on TV was so intriguing that it's actually,
you better stop
typing
right now.
Sorry. Oh my God. I'm going to be so embarrassed now.
What?
You're going to even be more embarrassed now that you said you're going to be embarrassed.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the show though, you know, to actually check it out because, you know, hearing such positive feedback about it, man, I never thought it was going to work, so.
Yeah, I think it's about time for me to pick up that, you know, the first season.
Yeah, I think I should check it out. I just feel like I'm falling so far behind on TV shows that, like,
I know, they're like on
season
4 of American Horror Story, and I've still not even sat down and watched the first season.
Yeah, I haven't. I just haven't watched it.
Yeah, I haven't even watched the first season either. And, like, I want to, you know, get into that one. I think I want to check out Bates Motel.
Yeah, I heard Bates Motel is pretty good.
Now I'm intrigued on the Hannibal, too. So this is, like, getting out of control, man. I don't know, man. How was the episodes of From Dusk Till Dawn, JP?
I only watched like the first 3 episodes. I'll wait for it to hit video, and then I'll, you know, pick it up or whatever. That I like binge watching. You know, I don't really like to wait week to week.
Yeah,
but I thought it was pretty damn solid from what I've seen. I was more surprised with that than I was Bates Motel because I thought there was no way in hell that show was going to even like hold a candle to it. Well, it does. That's really kind of unfair to compare it to the actual film, but it's just so surprisingly that I didn't hate it, and I actually thought it was pretty good, you know, from what I've seen. And I hear it just gets even better once they get to the, you know, titty twister and shit.
The fucking titty twister. Best name ever. So good. But yeah, it's another one that I'm actually kind of curious to check out too, so I don't know, maybe I'm going to have to, you know, pick these up and then do some binge watching and get them out of the way. You know, the nice thing about TV shows nowadays is that they really only have like they limit themselves, you know, for the episodes and stuff, right? You know, back in the day when you watch a sitcom, there'd be like yeah, there'd be like 30 episodes in like a season or something like that. You're like, holy shit, that's a lot of TV. But now if it's like 12 episodes or whatever, it's just, you can totally binge watch that. And, you know, I love that so much more though. I think it works way better when you have like, you know, less episodes, and because then every episode kind of means something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The landscape of TV has changed dramatically since the 90s.
We talked about this before.
Yeah. We talked about this like last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely not that filler that they used to have. I like that.
Dude, the freaking clip show episodes. God damn. Imagine trying to do that today.
Ugh.
Yeah. Clip shows were the worst.
That used to be the most disappointing thing ever. You know, like you're watching, say you're watching like, I don't know, some random sitcom or whatever, and then the brand new episode is like a clip show. You're like, are you serious?
Yeah, well, like, I was just going through the entire Fresh Prince series, if you remember. I went through all six seasons, and dude, there's some clip shows on there. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
I know.
And I actually watched them too, which is even more fucking retarded. So after Hannibal season 3, we have Michael Dougherty, who, you know, obviously directed one of the best Halloween films ever and one of the best anthologies ever, Trick or Treat. He now will be co-writing and directing Krampus, which is that twisted horror comedy set around the Christmas holiday. Yeah. I want to say that this one was the anthology, but it might be, I know Kevin Smith's Christmas horror film is an anthology, but I thought this one was an anthology too. We talked about it before in the podcast, but I can't really remember. But yeah, so Michael Dougherty is directing it, which who better to give a holiday horror film to than Michael Dougherty?
Yeah. I think I'm under the impression that it's not an anthology film.
Well, that's not fun.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it'd be super kick ass if it was.
Because for, you know, he can intertwine the stories like so well. So, based on an ancient legend about a pagan demon who punishes the wicked, this is, I guess he's still doing Trick or Treat too, but this is probably like more in the headlights right now. So, we'll see what he does with that. Of course, I'm excited for any holiday horror film, you know, especially Christmas or Halloween. Yeah. And, you know, Dougherty attached instantly gets my, you know, ears perked up even more. And, yeah, I'm totally down for this.
Yeah, I seriously can't wait. Yeah, that's gonna awesome. That's going to be awesome.
Yep. After that, NBC actually canceled their adaptation of Dracula, which I remember seeing the trailer for that, and it looked pretty awful. So, yeah, that happened.
Okay, they already canceled it. Did they ever drop
it? It was one season. It lasted one season.
Oh, okay. Okay. It's not like the Munsters where it was like one pilot and they're like, oh, fuck this.
Yeah, really?
Yes. So I guess nobody really cared about Dracula. I don't even remember what it really was like looking like, but I'm sure it was not like vampires how they should be. So that, you know, they probably just tried to use like the oversaturated style of vampire, you know, the post Twilight vampire series or something, you know, the True Blood type vampire. I don't know. Who knows? If anybody was a fan of Dracula out there, I'm sorry to tell you, but your show has been canceled.
The bringer of bad news, man.
Yeah. After that, Night of the Living Dead Origins 3D. Now, this was the animated film that was, you know, going on since like 2009. Danielle Harris, Bill Moseley. I guess it's finally finished, and it's screening at Cannes, and it, you know, shot completely in CG using, you know, stereoscopic 3D. I don't even know what to say about that. Like, I literally have no interest in that.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of this either, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it doesn't interest me at all, to be honest, either. But
I don't even really like the like animated stuff to begin with too much. So,
Well, it's just the fact that it's 3D too, and I'm just like, oh.
And it's just the fact that damn, there's so many fucking redos, reorigins of Night of the Living Dead that it's like, dude.
Oh yeah, it's so played out though. But I don't know. Maybe it'll actually be good. Who knows?
Oh, don't say that, Moods, because you know that's not gonna be true.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to be positive here, man. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's you got, you know, Danielle Harris voice acting, Bill Moseley voice acting. I mean, that's cool, but I'm just not big into like animation, like horror too much.
I still haven't watched that Adventures of something that Anchor Bay put out. Moods, you know what movie I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Living Corpses one.
Yeah.
I actually have a brand new Blu-ray, still sealed. I haven't watched it either. Should probably check that out sometime. Yeah. I've actually heard really good things about it though.
Yeah.
Yeah, most people that have watched it said it was pretty good. So I don't know. I think the animation kind of looks like a little older, like old school animation a little bit.
See, I like that stuff.
Which I think is kind of cool, man. But I'll check it out sometime. So. And right. I will. I'll give you my thoughts on it maybe one time.
Alrighty. Maniac Cop, being remade, produced by William Lustig. And going to be Danish filmmaker Nicholas Winding is, going to be producing it along with William Lustig. Director is going to be announced at Cannes Film Festival. There's a lot of things happening at Cannes this year.
I swore I heard Lustig talk about this like in October when I met him.
It's been talked about for a few years now. Yeah. Originally, Lustig was actually directing.
Yeah.
He was going to re... What?
Yeah.
That's so bizarre. I think it's kind of cool that he's actually involved in this, though. So, yeah. I mean, that's a plus.
Yeah, for sure. Maniac Cop is pretty... Oh, the writer is even more bizarre. The writer is the guy who wrote the second Captain America movie. Like the new one.
Okay, come again? What?
Yeah, dude, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's really weird. So why like how do you get that job? Like, hey, like you're sitting around the table one day, like William Lustig and all his guys are just like, hey, you know, why don't we get the writer from the Captain America film to do, you know, the Maniac Cop remake? Like, doesn't that just sound right?
Yeah. Well, what I think is maybe the treatment was wrote like a while ago, or, you know, the script was written a while ago before he got his big break in the Captain America film.
You know, it's quite that possible.
That happens from time to time. I think the guy who did totally. Cabin in the Woods, that happened too.
I totally 100% support that theory. I bet you that's exactly what happened. Because so, like you said, if this has been going on, this has been in talks for years, it's most likely what happened. Makes
so
sense.
Did William Lustig produce the remake of Maniac, didn't he?
Did he produce that? I actually
I'm
don't
pretty
know.
Sure. Actually, yes, he did.
Okay. I think he was attached to it.
Yeah. So, dude, this could... I mean, you know, dude, my only beef with it is you're not going to capture that, like, New York setting. So mm-hmm. I would actually just set it somewhere else because it's not going to feel the same and it's going to bug me. But then again, you know what, man? Maniac did an okay job of it. So I guess I can't really.
We'll have to shoot at like 2 o'clock in the morning, like old Maniac Cop.
I love me some sleazy New York. And it's like one of my favorite things in the world when it comes to horror films. I just am obsessed with that
look. There's nothing cooler than watching a film that's set in like 1980s New York, man. Yeah. It always just has that really awesome atmosphere, no matter how shitty the film is. It always seems to capture it well. It's great.
Yeah, dude. You think stuff like Basket Case and Chud, where everything's just filthy. It's just
Gross, those are
nasty.
Those are perfect examples, man. Like Chud is so filthy. It's so filthy. In Basket Case,
Daniel Stern walking around with his nasty ass greasy like face and shit. It's fucking gross. I love it.
Totally, man. Totally. Fucking awesome.
Yeah. Maniac Cop. You know what, man? Why the fuck not?
You know, honestly, that just knowing like, you know, that Lustig's involved in it and stuff, like generally I would say, you know, nay on the fucking remake for Maniac Cop, but whatever, man.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cool story, though, man. I mean, it's like, you can... There's more to that story that you can tell. I mean, Maniac Cop 3, like, kind of sucked a little bit, so...
Yeah, well, I mean, they even admitted... They even admitted that, like... I don't know what Larry Cohen was doing with that script and stuff, or with the screenplay and stuff, but... Yeah, they just... It is a really bad sequel. I don't know. I know Zach's just screaming right now going, fuck you guys.
That
I like that
is
one.
So surprising to me.
But it's funny, though, because, like, even, like, you know, Larry Cohen and stuff, they've even admitted that movie's not good.
Okay, guys, you let us know. What would you rather have, Maniac Cop 4 or Maniac Cop Remake?
Yeah.
So,
you know, either way, as long, you know, whatever.
I'm down for whatever, dude. I want to see another Maniac Cop. That's what I want to see. Yeah.
I don't know. Maniac Cop 4?
There's really not much to continue, though. Yeah, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I after Maniac, dude, that Maniac kind of restored my faith in the remake. Like I have not been pro remake ever, but I'm less against remakes now after I seen Maniac, because that film like blew me away.
Yeah, I mean, of course for me it was I literally lost my socks on that one because
what? I never heard that in my life. Lost my socks?
It blew my socks off. It blew my socks off, and I couldn't find them after. Like, they were just poof. They were gone.
My socks always disappear.
But you know, like how much I love the original Maniac film. Like, I think it's because I went in with such a
low positive attitude for
it. Well, I'm not even low. I just kind of went in thinking, well, I'm gonna watch this movie and just take it for what it is. Uh-huh. Like, I'm not really expecting anything from it. And I think I went in with the perfect mindset. Like, I wasn't expecting, like, I mean, honestly, like, we've talked about this before, but when I heard that Elijah Wood was gonna be playing, the killer, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. So I'm like, that is the worst start, the worst thing ever to hear. You know, yeah. That's the first details I heard about the film, and I was like, oh my God, are you serious? And so whatever. And then once again, I had to put, kind of disconnect myself with, who Elijah Wood was and or is and stuff. And then just went in with the right attitude. But it really was a good film, though. You know, they did a lot of good things with that movie. So but yeah, I think that's what you got to do when you really, really love a movie like that.
You got to disconnect. You have to in any remake. And I hate when people say, it kind of bastardizes the whole, series or whatever, because I just don't find that possible. Because you look at Halloween, like if any film would do that, it would be Halloween Resurrection. And still, I love Halloween, the original, just as much with or without Halloween Resurrection.
Yeah, totally.
So, just disconnect, man. They're not the same. They're not destroying the original. It's fine.
I know. I mean, they did Freddy's Dead, and I don't love Dream Warriors any less.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess
Dream Warriors. If anything, I love Dream Warriors a little more because I'm like, thank God this is like not Freddy's Dead.
Yeah.
thank God there's no power glove in here.
I always thought it was so interesting when people say that, though. They're like, these sequels are just bringing down the franchise and stuff like, or, ruining, these type of films. And I'm like, how is that even possible?
I mean, technically it can bring down the franchise because when you're looking at the franchise as a whole, it doesn't hurt the original films. Like, the ones you like you're still going to like them just as much.
Totally. And, I just kind of worded that funny, but that's what I meant, though. I meant like the original films and stuff. And
yeah.
I don't think it hurts it at all, really. I mean, it's just like,
even in the Hellraiser series.
Well, I mean, as bad as the Hellraiser sequels are, it doesn't change my opinion on part one and two at all.
Mm-hmm. At all.
I mean,
the only film that I think that kind of did it with was Bride of Chucky for me.
Yeah.
Because I hate Seed of Chucky so much, and I see the way it was going in Bride that it made me like it a little less. But it's rare for that to happen.
Seed of Chucky is so fucking horrendous, man.
Yeah, that movie is bad.
It's bad. Me and my grandma were so pissed off when that fucking movie was over at the movie theaters, man. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's fucking horrendous.
I actually saw that piece of shit on the big screen, too. Yeah. Oh, it's awful, man. It was so bad.
Yeah.
I remember watching it with the wife, and she's even like, this movie's terrible. Like, it's just very odd for her to say that, right?
It's like, why couldn't we have Curse, man?
Yeah.
Get that exactly. Shit.
Yep.
Yeah, so after that, I forget where we was at with that, but, I think everybody's okay with a Maniac Cop remake, at least now. William Lustig being part of it definitely is a good sign. After that, we have a couple DVD announcements. Cannibal Holocaust 3-disc set. That now has a street date. Before, they just reported that it was happening. It now has a street date and cover art, and that is July 1st. And when I initially looked at the pricing, it was like, I think $30. And I looked back and it was like $35.95. Of course, that'll probably drop when it gets, you know, when the release actually happens. But
You can pre-order the Cannibal Holocaust 3-disc edition at Diabolik DVD, and I think it's $24.99 on the site.
Yeah, it's like $40 on Amazon. Okay. I'm like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah, it's $35.95 on Amazon. I was
Diabolik's got a great price. I didn't realize it was even up for pre-orders, and Lost Witch Adrian, he had posted in the group, and I said, where'd you pre-order it from? Because I hadn't seen the pre-orders. And he said, Diabolik DVD, and I'm like, oh, fucking awesome. So he gave me the link, and I went there, and it was like $24. And yeah, awesome. Amazon's price was like $10 more. I couldn't recommend them enough. I just got a package with 7 Blu-rays the other day from them, and it ships up here in like a week to me. So you guys probably get them in like a couple of days, man. They're really, really fucking good, man.
Yeah, you know what? I'm down to pay the 25 or 20, you know, in the 20s because the DVD is like $20, you know?
Well, Grindhouse stuff is expensive, but it's really quality, man. Every release that they put out is really worth it. You know, they do really good artworks, reversibles, special features, like the pack, everything about the releases.
I mean, like the old DVDs are still like $20. The ones, you know, that came out
years ago. Because they all went out of print because, you know, with the company, with the whole story with the company, what happened and stuff with the owner dying and shit. It's like a whole different conversation. Yeah, so all their stuff, like the whole company kind of came to a halt there for a long time, so nothing was in print. So everything kind of went through the roof and stuff. But, you know, with that said, I'm glad that they're, you know, they're back going and they're releasing Blu-rays, but they're doing a great job, man. Like, I have a couple, picked up the Corruption one. I really highly recommend that. So I'm really looking forward to this triple disc. I didn't even really look at the specs. Did you happen to check out the specs on
it? Yeah, I did. There was like a lot of stuff with the music and there was some features on there, man.
Comes like a CD and stuff.
Oh, it's actually got the soundtrack?
It's like Father's Day.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Looks dope. I'm definitely gonna get it, especially since I've been. This is the whole reason I've not bought Cannibal Holocaust yet, is because I just felt that there was gonna be a awesomer edition coming sooner or later, and it finally happened. So
yeah, I don't have it either.
Same reason I haven't bought Tales from the Hood yet, because I'm still hoping. But I actually did do some research on that, and I think that there's rights issues with that film, like why it can't be put out again. So yeah, and then after that we have Lucky McKee's film All Cheerleaders Die is I think it's now available on VOD, and it has a limited theatrical release that will kick off June 13th, and a Blu-ray DVD release has been confirmed for July 22nd. I think this film's been getting good reviews.
I like Lucky McKee, man. It's good.
So do I. For sure.
Definitely looking forward to checking this out, man.
Yeah, I forget the guy's name who directed it, but he's a regular collaborator.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
So that wraps up for the news, guys.
All right. Wow, that's pretty mellow news tonight. Lots of interesting things, though, I would have to say. All right, so going to hop into this question of the week, which is the top 5 found footage films that you guys have seen. So, who has the list?
I got it. And start off with a disclaimer once again. I just want to apologize to everybody's list that got missed in the last couple weeks.
YouTube's whack as hell with the comment section.
It was totally fucking, it was YouTube, and so far, like, the comments weren't there. Like, they weren't even showing up in my feed and stuff. So I don't know what happened, but I do apologize to everybody that's, you know, was missed and stuff. Like I said, I had no control. I didn't even know they were fucking there. So, but I have switched over to Chrome, to Google Chrome. So, and it seems like everything's here. I've been keeping track all week of who's been leaving comments, and I've been replying right away. So I think they're all here. So I think we're good to go. Yes. The last week question, of course, was top 5 found footage films. And I expected a lot of people to basically say what they did. You know, a lot of people aren't a fan of found footage films. But, you know, when you make a list, it seems like the ones that are on people's list, they actually do enjoy I'm kind of the same way. Like, you know, I think we're all
Moots
kind
was
of...
surprised to see how many good ones there was last week when we was talking about them after the show.
Yeah, you know, I started compiling a list of, you know, the ones that I personally like, and I was like, wow, this list is actually pretty long.
You mean you Entity know? Isn't on your list? It's not number one?
Which one?
Entity.
Oh, yeah, fuck that. That movie's so bad. But yeah, I was just really, really surprised that how many I actually did enjoy. And that's, you know, what got me to watch The Bay last week, too, because I had it in the collection. And I'm glad I did it. I really enjoyed that movie. It was good.
Is that the one about, like, some environmentalist and shit or something?
No, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's about environments. It's shit that's going on in the water and stuff. It's really cool. It's a cool story. I really enjoyed it. Okay, so we'll get into this top five list here. And Andrew Cripps, top five found footage films. The Last Horror Movie. That's a good choice. Number four, Grave Encounters. I know Jeremy always talks highly of this one. I still have yet to see it. JP, you haven't seen it either, have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like a lot of people talk highly of it. So
it's so good.
Number three, VHS 1 and 2. So Andrew is cheating. Yes. Number two is The Blair Witch Project. And number one is Cannibal Holocaust. Yeah, cool, man. Now, I think I actually had people ask me if Cannibal Holocaust, you know, fits the criteria of found footage. And of course it does. Because I think it's basically one of the first ones. Sorry, guys. I am going to make sure that I'm not fucking missing anybody. Okay. Who do we got here? We got Joey Herring. Sorry, guys. All right. So, Lost Witch, Adrian's list right here. He said that, you know, he didn't even do five. He said he's not a big fan of it, so he only did four. So, number four, Diary of the Dead. Number three, VHS 2, Blair Witch Project number two, and number one, Cannibal Holocaust.
So you didn't like VHS even, huh? The first one.
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, Paul Henderson. We've got number five, Grave Encounters, VHS 2 at number four. Number three, The Last Broadcast. Number
I
two.
Still need to see that.
Yeah. Number two.
Is that DVD?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like... Yeah. A little more harder to get now, I think. I'm not sure. Don't quote me.
That's like the Polksy tapes or whatever.
Polksy tapes.
Yeah, that's not a DVD.
Number two, The Troll Hunter. And number one, Cannibal Holocaust. So we are seeing a trend here, which is kind of what I expected with this. Critter Buster, number six. He did a top six list because he was one of the guys that the list got missed last week. Yeah. So sorry, I apologize once again. Number six, he put Chronicle. I've still yet to
actually
watch that
movie. Which is a solid, solid film. I wouldn't necessarily classify it as horror, but it's if it was, I would definitely have it on my top five because that movie kicks some major ass. It's a really good like character study ish thing. Found footage angle is really, really great, and you know it's just badass. It's like it's the kind of superhero film I want to see.
Yeah, I heard it's actually really fucking good.
Yeah, I like I said, I have it. I got to watch that one, too. Number five, VHS 2. Number four, Quarantine, which actually really surprised me that was on someone's list.
You know what? I've actually never seen the Rec series, but I did see Quarantine, and I like Quarantine, actually. So
very interesting. I'm actually not a big fan of it. But number three, St. Francisville Experiment. Number two, Cloverfield, which I
always really like Chris's list because I feel a lot of the choices that are similar to some of mine.
Mm-hmm. And number one, Blair Witch Project, and there you go. Okay, so Martin VP, top five. Number
I also
five.
Really like Martin's list. They're always...
Yeah, really I've noticed you guys have very similar. Yeah. Number five, Paranormal Activity. At number five. some people, it's funny how like it's so divided. Some people love that.
I'm stating this right now. Whenever we do a show on the Paranormal Activity films, Moods will find it surprising that he might actually like the first one on rewatch.
Nope.
You know what's funny? I was actually at HMV yesterday and I was going to buy, they have like the first three films into like a little box set. Uh-huh. They're all individual and stuff. It was $15. I was like, oh, I should actually just grab it. It's $5 a film, whatever. But I will wait until we, you know, do our
That'll be discussion. A while from now, but we'll get to it. I'm excited about that one.
Okay, so number five, Paranormal Activity. Number four, Atrocious. Yep. It's a good film. Number three, VHS. So the very first VHS. Number two, Wreck. And number one, The Blair Witch Project. So yes,
I was surprised to not see Wreck more often, considering how often people like talk about that film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, totally.
It's good.
Dubby. Number five, Chernobyl Diaries.
I don't really consider that found footage.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but I don't know. I'm actually a really big fan of that film too. I remember when it first came out, it was getting fucking shit on.
Still haven't watched it.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed, to be completely honest. Maybe I have to rewatch it.
I was surprised. I know Moods and Andrew Bow and I both really liked it.
I saw it in theaters. Yeah. I was kind of like, I thought it was such a cool premise. It's kind of let down a little bit. Yeah, I thought the ending was kind of shitty.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. It's funny that I saw that movie so differently. I remember going into it going, man, like all I've heard is negative things. And when I hear a lot of negative things about a film, it kind of makes me want to watch it even more.
Yeah, me too.
And that was a perfect one. I was like, oh, I got to check out Chernobyl Diaries. Really enjoyed it. I was like fucking baffled, but I don't know. I do agree. It's a really cool premise. Number four, Diary of the Dead, which I was surprised to see on any list too. That movie is actually growing on me a lot more.
Yeah, me too. Well, I actually always liked it. I've only seen it once, but I liked it when I seen it.
Mm-hmm. Number three, VHS. Number two, Wreck. And number one, Cannibal Holocaust. Once again,
Cannibal Holocaust and Blair Witch are like the juggernauts. And I was like extremely surprised to see how many people actually really, really like VHS. And it goes to show like how big of a thing that those were in like the found footage genre. Like VHS is, you know, a new film, and it's making all these top five lists. Mm-hmm. It's impressive.
Totally. Okay. Dawn's Bombs. Number five, Quarantine. Number four, VHS. Number three, Blair Witch Project. Number two, Wreck. And number one, Cloverfield. I really like Cloverfield, man. I think it's fun. I know that movie kind of makes people sick a little bit because it is so unsteady. Like, it's just, well, they're running pretty much the entire time, right? So, but yeah, I enjoy it, though.
I'm so startled.
Yeah.
You and your horror movies. Number five, Frankenstein's Army.
Is he new?
No, You and Your Horror Movies. He posts on our group page all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, same as Matthew. So number five, Frankenstein's Army. I have talked about this movie before, actually. I think I talked about it on the podcast, actually, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, and I stated the things I liked and didn't like about the film, but overall it's fun. It's a good film. Number four, Cloverfield. Number three, VHS. Number two, Wreck. And number one, Blair Witch Project. Wow, those are really on a lot of lists. Number one, movie collector 666, Zach, of course, with his top six list. Number six, The Bay. That's fucking awesome. Number five, Chernobyl Diaries. Number four, the Poughkeepsie Tapes, which I've never seen. And it's always sounded very interesting. Yeah, it sounds interesting. It looks cool too. So I'm gonna have to check that one out sometime.
I know it was on like MySpace, but now MySpace is gone pretty much. So
yeah. Number three, Behind the Mask. Now, do you guys consider this a found footage film?
Yeah,
I guess a little bit.
You know,
Found footage / documentary, mockumentary. Yeah. I lump all those together.
Totally. You know, I never really thought of it until on Friday night. My buddy Dylan was over here, and we were watching, or he came over to watch a film, and he's like, "Man, dude, I've never seen Behind the Mask." And I'm like, "Okay, let's throw it on." And then I'm watching, I'm going, "Is this a found footage movie?" I don't know. It was weird. I just never really thought of it as one, but
yeah, dude, Behind the Mask, man. We covered that way back on the freaking Burial Grounds with Clive.
Yeah. Yeah. And my buddy Dylan fucking loved it. He's like, man, this movie is so damn cool. I'm like, I know
it is, you know? Dude. Remember Clive wasn't digging it. Like, he didn't care for it too much.
Yeah.
That was a fun talk.
Yeah. Number two, The Last Exorcism, which I thought was
really
fun until the end. I hated the end of that movie, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know my man. Opinion on Exorcist movies.
I hated it. You know, there's things that I liked about it, but it wasn't even just the end for me. There was just, like, issues that I had with it throughout. But I thought, like, it was really solid at first, though. I did enjoy it most of the film.
And number one, Cannibal Holocaust. Yep. All right, Steve
It's fitting
Clark.
To have that Cannibal Holocaust news this show.
Yeah, no doubt, right? All right, Steve Clark, number five, Frankenstein's Army. Number four, Blair Witch Project. Number three, Grave Encounters. Number two, Chernobyl Diaries. And number one, The Tunnel. That's fucking awesome. I am going to do a quick run through here. I think that is everybody.
All right. Sorry if we missed you. It's really not our fault.
Yeah, and I believe that is everybody's list, actually. I thought there was more, but maybe they are missing again. Fuck, I don't know. Anyways, who wants to go first? Who wants to go first with their list here?
I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
All right, number five, I got Troll Hunter. Just fucking awesome movie. That film is...
I still haven't seen that one.
It's really fucking good.
I so agree with that.
Yeah. Number four, I have Atrocious, which only made one person's list, which I was kind of surprised because it's actually pretty fucking solid. I think it's one of the better Bloody Disgusting Selects films out there. It's really good. Number three, I have Wreck.
I wasn't surprised to see that on your list. I figured that one would be there.
Yeah, I really, really enjoy that film. I enjoy the sequel as well. The third one is I know I talked about it on the podcast a while ago.
I still get to watch it.
And I know the fourth one's coming out, which returns back to the storyline of the first and second one. So I'm curious. Number two, I have Tunnel, which is, you know, fucking amazing. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, of course, I have Grave Encounters, which is... It's
you have an interesting list.
Yeah, yeah. None of the, you know, big movies that everyone likes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I'll go.
We all know Mood's number one, so.
So I thought I'd take Zach's motto and do a top six this week because
you motherfucker.
Yeah.
Cheating, dude.
I haven't cheated, motherfucker, because I actually was having a hard time.
You cheated like three times so far on this show.
How have I cheated three times?
I swear you did like you cheated with doing like
I'm gonna do a top
two
eight.
At number yeah. You're gonna come I back with like not. A top 15 next time.
I did not. It's a top
go
six.
Back in the archives. You did it. You've cheated like one other time at least.
I think I might have done a top six list once, but for the most part, no. Okay, number six, VHS 2. I love it, man. It's a great fucking movie. Number five, Long Pigs. I was surprised not to see this on anyone's list. Long Pigs is fucking... It's a Canadian found footage film that follows a serial killer, and it literally follows the serial killer in his day-to-day killings and stuff, and he like shows like on camera and stuff, he's like, you know, cutting up bodies
and
shit like that.
Yeah, I know this film. I've heard of this one before.
Fuck, it's good, man. It's a really, really cool premise. Number four, Troll Hunter.
Wow.
Love Troll Hunter, man.
It's really good, man.
Movie's so good.
So underrated.
Yeah, number three, The Last Broadcast. I know that you guys have probably heard my views on this movie.
I've been so curious of this film for years. I really need to get it.
It's really fucking good. Number two, Cannibal Holocaust. And number one... The Tunnel. The Tunnel became my favorite found footage film after watch. I was fucking blown away by this.
I told you.
Really good.
Didn't I tell you? I told you, man. That movie, man, is so good.
Yeah, dude. I was like so... I'm like halfway through the film going, this is exactly how a found footage film should be done.
Yeah.
Like, so it's great, man. Just such a good feel, overall feel to it.
All right. I actually had a bit of trouble with mine, and for some reason it feels like I'm forgetting... films, or I just maybe haven't seen enough or something, because I look at my list and I'm like, huh, it just doesn't feel right. But I was also surprised to see that like nobody had like the August Underground film on there, because
mm-hmm.
like I thought a lot of people really liked those things.
I have it actually on a list just under my top six.
Oh, really? Number five, Cloverfield for me. I've only seen this film one time, but when I seen it, I really was impressed with it. I was stuck it somewhere where I didn't want to be one summer, and they just had a ton of like DVDs, and I just sat there every day like drinking beer because they had a lot of beer too, and watching movies. And like one day I popped in Cloverfield and I like loved it, so that's why it makes my list. Good times mm-hmm. in a bad situation. Number four is Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. This one just sticks out to me, man. I really like the idea behind it. It's I really just want to see that sequel. Sequel, prequel, remake, whatever the hell it is. Next up, VHS. VHS at number three. That first segment blew me away, man. It really did. It made my skin crawl. Got my heart going. It was scary.
Grave Encounters did that to me, man.
Yeah. Number two is VHS 2. It's a better movie. Didn't quite affect me like the first film, but there's way more solid segments in VHS 2. And then number one, of course, is the best found footage film ever made.
Blair Witch.
Paranormal Activity. I'm kidding. It's I pulled Moods and his Sharknado thing that he did
the
recently.
Entity.
I thought that was funny.
The Entity.
No, hell no. It's the Blair Witch Project. Of course, the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah. Solid list. I'm actually quite surprised that Wreck 2 isn't on more people's list.
Such a better film.
Was Wreck 2 on anybody's list?
No, I don't think it was.
Wreck 2 is still good, though.
Because I always heard that Wreck 2 was the better one.
It follows the Halloween storyline that takes place like seconds after the first film ends. So yeah. it's really good.
That Phantasm storyline.
You can't, because Wreck 3 doesn't really follow it.
I think the only film that I had in that list of found footage films that I made for myself that wasn't on anyone else's list was Lake Mungo. Have you guys seen that one?
No, I haven't.
It's a really good film, man. I believe it's Australian, actually. It's just a really kind of no one ever talks about this movie, but it's got a really serious tone to it. It's like, about this girl that gets abducted and stuff, and it's really cool. Like,
dude, I think we did miss somebody's list. Didn't somebody have Megan Is Missing on their list?
Yeah. So where the hell? No. That was Andy. That was the very first one. Andy Cripps. He said honorable mention Megan Is Missing.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah. I just forgot to say that, but, that's actually an interesting thing to bring up. Megan Is Missing because, have you guys seen the movie?
No.
Oh, you guys haven't seen it? Oh, that sucks.
That's one of those films that is like hits YouTube, like, and everybody talks about it, and it just annoys me. So I like bury it for years until I'm like ready to see it without any hype at all.
Yeah, dude. When this movie came out, like everybody was talking about, like everyone's like, if you got kids, you got to see this movie and blah blah.
Even
blah.
Those guys who like really necessarily up. Don't do like horror stuff all the time, those like more of the mainstream guys, they even was talking about it.
Oh yeah. Like there was thousands of reviews on YouTube.
And the guys who will make it, will post a video when like Star Wars news happens or something. Some big news, and your whole feed is like Star Wars. Those guys were talking about it.
Oh, for sure. And I kept getting recommended this film. Like, you have to see Megan's Missing. So I picked it up, and I thought it was shitty, man.
You should watch. You should watch Trust, man. Trust is a much better Predator film.
Yeah. Have you seen Zero Day?
This is just
off topic. Trust Zero is. Day.
Which one?
About putting that on my list. It's not really horror though. Zero Day. It's like a Columbine. It's like a Columbine story, but in found footage style.
I think I actually have seen. Maybe that film's really interesting to me.
I love the Columbine story. I find it just completely crazy and fascinating. I don't mean like love that it happened. I just mean like it's like a serial killer. You look at it and just are amazed at like how the hell did this happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So I think that's going to do it for last week's answers and stuff. So I guess we're all waiting what this week's question is.
Top five mothers in horror.
This week's question actually stems from a comment I left on one of Andrew Ballina's video, recent videos or whatever, and he was doing like an all vampire.
Oh, don't do vampire movies. Themed. I haven't watched many vampire movies.
Dude, you've seen vampires. There's like a billion vampire movies. You've had to see enough to make five.
But this makes the okay. This question stems from this comment that I made because he's doing this update and stuff, and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, fuck, I don't even know if I could do a top 10 list of post 2000 vampire films. And I was like, shit, well, this works perfect for
question of the week. List.
Okay, so your top five post 2000 vampire films. I was really having a hard time even thinking of a bunch that I liked because there's so many that I dislike. There's a couple really obvious choices in there. I think that everyone's probably thinking the same thing right now.
Interview with a Vampire.
Well, that's no, that movie 90s, came out in the
90s. Oh, it's 90s?
Yeah. That came out. I remember watching that when it hit video.
Fuck, that movie's so good.
Let the Right One In is the one that I was thinking of really.
Yeah, that's the immediate one I was thinking of.
Byzantium, whatever.
Byzantium and stuff. Yeah, so, I mean, there
Thirst,
is some.
That Asian film, Chan-wook Park.
Yeah, Thirst. Thirst is
good. Kiss of the Damned.
Which I still have not seen. But yeah, but like, okay, so that's next week's question. Top five post 2000 vampire films. Because I did the post because I thought it was a hard question. And obviously pre 2000 would be pretty fucking easy to pick.
Yeah.
It would just be hard to narrow it down because there's so many good vampire
films. Bam, Fright Night, Lost Boys.
Yeah,
shit, dude.
There's so
Near Dark. Ones. Jesus Christ, that's my list right there.
Yeah, Ravenous, like, but Ravenous fucking cannibals.
Yeah, right. Like the 80s one, but I like a lot of older ones too. Like, I actually really like the original Dracula from 31. I love that film. Well, I guess technically it is original. I don't know. You guys know what I mean. So top five post 2000 vampire films for next week. I know vampires isn't everyone's cup of tea, but you know.
Yeah, vampires have gotten annoying. They're just like that annoying like horror thing that used to be cool.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I guess we'll get into some releases. I don't think last week I even did the releases, did I?
No.
I didn't do anything.
It's like a...
Spent like an hour and a half on the news.
Yeah, last week's news was insane. So some of the releases that came out last week, I'll just quickly go over them. Mr. Jones, do you guys have any interest in seeing Mr. Jones?
Yeah, I have.
I saw it at Walmart.
Movie? I've been following like the picture because, I quit watching trailers, but the fucking pictures. What do they call those? Whatever the images, you know, the images that come out to promote the movie, like those were really cool looking.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to see this shit like just based on those images.
Yeah, I've noticed some people already picked it up and stuff, and I don't know, it looks kind of cool. I was actually gonna pick it up yesterday, but I was like, nah, I just didn't feel like spending the money. But I think it looks kind of cool.
It's a $1.50 pickup.
Yeah, I think so. And also, I just wanted to briefly mention all the fucking Godzilla films that got released last week. I know everyone's been picking these things up left and right. They're actually pretty cheap right now, but I mean, I'm not going to go through all the titles, but everybody knows that they're out.
Who's
there.
Who's putting those out? Is it like Echo Bridge?
Sony.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's so many of them. It's really cool that they're releasing all those older films, but Countess
Dracula.
Are they
not released or something?
I don't know if some of these had DVD releases before. Or
so now are all the Godzilla films out in the U.S. on like, you know, the right versions?
No idea.
Because if I want to watch them, I want to watch them all. So
yeah, there's a ton, dude. It's crazy how many.
Isn't there like but... there's like 30 or some shit?
I heard the new one is actually not that bad.
You know, I think I'm actually gonna go check it out.
I was thinking about it too because I was like, I was looking at it and I was just like, dude, this actually looks pretty cool. Like,
Countess Dracula finally came out from Synapse Films, part of the Hammer Horror Collection. Fucking pick it up. It's phenomenal. The Birds came out on Blu-ray last week.
Well, it's already out on Blu-ray, but it got an individual release.
You got an individual release, exactly. More Godfather.
That's another film I've never seen, and I really need to see The Birds.
It's great, man. It's a good film. And I believe that, you know, the Psycho Blu-ray got a re-release.
Yeah, it did.
So that's... I noticed that the other day. I was at the store, and I seen a bunch of copies in there. I'm like, oh, that has to be a re-release. But it does, because it's like got a digital copy and stuff. So for the people out there that didn't pick up the Psycho Blu-ray before it went out of print, it has been re-released. So that is awesome.
Same with Salem's Lot.
See, yes. Yeah, actually, that is out. The thing with Psycho is when that went out of print, I was not worried at all. I was like, there's no way in hell that this isn't going to get another release some point in my life. You know, it's just one of those films that is constantly going to be re-released throughout time that you never have to worry about it going out of print.
100% agree with you. And also a film from 1977 called Werewolf. I think the fucking cover just looks phenomenal in this.
Really, how are you going to call your film Werewolf? That's like making your superhero invincible.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. But yeah, the cover.
Oh yeah. By the way, guys, Hawks won. Go on.
Oh, did they end up winning? Wow. Okay. So for this week's releases that are coming out this Tuesday, we have from Scream Factory, Evil Speak, and Final Exam are being released on Tuesday. Fucking awesome. Anyone? No? Okay.
How many copies of Final Exam do you have now, Moods?
Final Exam? No, this will just be my second one, but this will be my third copy of Evil Speak, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's ridiculous. There's a movie, like a slasher film called Hazard Jack that's coming out. Look, I thought it actually looked kind of cool.
Sounds terrible.
It does. It totally sounds terrible, but the dude actually looks kind of cool on the cover. Then we got some like 4-packs and stuff. Have you guys heard anything about the movie Piggy?
Nope.
No? Okay, anyways.
Piggy, wasn't that released in the UK?
Ooh, I remember that was the kid in Lord of the Flies.
I swear I heard Scotty talking about this movie like a long ass fucking time ago.
Totally. This movie had a release in the UK a long, long time ago. It's finally getting a region 1 release. Anyways, Piggy. I think I heard pretty mixed things on it, though. I think
Scotty liked it.
Yeah. Okay. There's this fucking movie coming out called The Zombinator. It literally looks like The Terminator, but it's like a zombie. Oh, man. So bad.
Sounds terrible.
Oh, it just sounds so bad. So bad. And there is a brand new Troma release coming out this Tuesday, and it's a movie called Bad Mouth. I don't know anything about this. I've never even heard of it. But I will be picking that up in the near future. So
sounds like a porno gone wrong.
Bad Mouth? Yeah. That's a good name for a porno gone wrong.
they had a sale on Troma, and I was actually going to grab that Toxic Avenger box set, but it was in the morning when I seen it, and then by the time I got home, I forgot about it. So shit.
Nice.
No, not nice. I didn't grab it.
Yeah, well, I'm totally saying that sarcastically. You fucked that up. You fucked that up big time, dude. I heard it was going for like, what, $13 or something?
It was like $15. I've only seen the first film. I'm like, you know me and Troma. Like, I'm just not that familiar with it, and I kind of has a bad vibe with me from the beginning. So I figured I would, give the films that kind of get the most praise attention first, see what I think of them, but I fucked up.
This is something I wanted to start like such a long time ago from the magazine Rue Morgue. They have this little
section. We did it once, I believe.
I think I did it once, yeah, and I completely kind of forgot about it.
It was early.
Yeah, so it's a section called Corner. They have a section here called Coroner's Report. It's basically just a section in the magazine about weird stats and like morbid facts and stuff. And I just always wanted to read one of these things off like every week and stuff. I don't know. Jeremy probably knew this. I'm surprised that I didn't know this, but it's because it's just so fucking obvious. But maybe I'm the only person in the world that didn't know this, but I thought this was actually interesting. I was reading this. The name of Chucky, human alter ego, Charles Lee Ray.
Charles Manson, yeah. Harvey Lee Harvey Oswald, and,
James Earl Ray. I think that's so fucking cool that they just like, it's just so easy, but it flows so well. Charles Lee Ray.
Yeah,
I absolutely love that, man. I thought that was just very,
very
cool.
I can't believe you didn't know that. Yeah, you are the only guy that didn't know that.
Probably, but that is not the fact that I wanted to read out this week. I thought this was interesting. Okay, so before shooting The Shining, Stanley Kubrick took the whole fucking cast of The Shining, and he fucking made them watch Eraserhead to get into the mood. Yeah, and to get into the mood of you know, filming a horror film. I thought that was actually a really interesting and odd choice.
Let me bring that up in my film class. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, it's like a Eraserhead. Like
Stanley Kubrick
so bizarre.
Did a lot of weird shit.
I would not want to work for that guy. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, man.
He was a fucking nut.
He saw Holy, things he's a such certain a way, and that's But I mean, hey.
He made.
I think we're kind of missing a lot of that in today's filmmakers that like, you know, you look at some of the, like the greats, like Hitchcock and stuff, they all had these like weird things about them that, where they like, you know, had these certain ways of doing things. And you don't hear too much about that anymore.
Totally.
Ever actually.
Yeah. Ever.
lots of weird, quirky people back in the day, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that is going to do it for Mood Swings. Yep.
All righty. So, all
right. Cool, cool.
That was a fun Mood Swings. I definitely think this found footage list was like one of the easier lists, in my opinion, to do. Mm. Anyway, I'm going to go into the What We Watch segment, where do we agree on two picks, two films and a pick of the week, right? Is that what we're going to do?
I have three films.
All right. I have two and a pick of the week, so whatever you guys want to do doesn't matter to me. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
So the first film that I watched is Atrocious from the year 2010. And I watched this specifically for the reason of it. I've heard good things from both Jeremy and Moods. And I was like, you know what? I want to see if this would make my top five. Maybe my top six, seven. It's a really solid film. It follows two teenage siblings who are kind of doing their documentary filmmaking thing as they travel to their vacation house, I guess it is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a nice layout. And that's one of the strongest points of the film. I think
the ending is fucking awesome.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, the set pieces are really neat. You know, they got like a hedge type maze outside. You know, it's more than just hedges though. It's like full like grown in stuff. There's a whale out there, very creepy stuff there. The house is really cool looking, you know, a lot of cool shots in the house and stuff. The kid will set up his camera in different places. This is a Spanish film, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So basically there's like an urban legend of a girl ghost thing that, you know, kind of haunts the grounds or whatever, and they pretty much are trying to, you know, make their little movie and stuff, and shit starts happening, to say the least. Their dog disappears, and kind of the reveal of the dog was pretty powerful. So like Jeremy says, the ending, I actually really like the ending. I'll tell you what, though, man. This surprises me that you have, like, this is why I said your list is interesting, because this film is very, very much like The Blair Witch Project. It almost is a copy of The Blair Witch Project in certain ways. There's even certain scenes that are done very similarly. When one of the characters takes off running through the hedge maze, it exactly took me back to The Blair Witch when at the end of the film, when the one character was running, the male character was running, and Heather's trying to follow him and stuff. And there's just even the ending, like, kind of, you know, reminded me of the ending of The Blair Witch Project in a certain way. And I think this film owes a lot to The Blair Witch in the way that it was done. So yeah, it's solid. I give it a 7.5 out of 10.
Oh, that's pretty good for you.
Yeah, I really liked it. Now, I highly recommend this movie. I just noticed the similarities between The Blair Witch, and that's probably why I like it, too. Really good acting, surprisingly. I was kind of surprised at that. You know, sometimes I can't really necessarily 100%, you know, it doesn't shine through when I'm reading subtitles because I'm looking at the words and kind of the other the faces and stuff are kind of in my peripherals. But, yeah. Very, very good. I really like Atrocious. It's very solid.
Yeah, I really agree, man, with, you know, your assessment of it. It's a good film, you know. Mm-hmm.
It is. It's very solid from front to back. Yeah. Solid story, great ending. Very creepy moments. There's points in the house where there's the kid is moving through the house when shit's going down, and he's like so scared to look like in one section of the house, so he just runs past the doorway, and it just reminded me of like just a realistic look at like what you would do in that situation, how fearful you'd be.
I remember when I was watching that movie for the first time, and I was thinking to myself, I really hope the ending doesn't let me down.
And I thought it was going to, but then it
didn't. I totally understand where you're coming from. I was like, no, don't let me down. Don't let me down. And then, and it just like kind of delivered the goods. And
yeah,
it's just totally, wow. Yeah. There's nothing worse than watching a film, especially of like, you know, the found footage type. And then, you know, everything's going pretty good. And the ending is just complete ball sacks. And you're like, ugh, fucking ruins it so bad. But that movie
You though. Because I totally was feeling a bad ending coming in. I was totally, and then I thought I was right. I was like, "Yep, see, bad ending." And then I was wrong. And you know, I love the ending of the Blair Witch Project. I think it's, I believe I named it my top one ending of all time, maybe. So yeah, I mean, shit, dude, this one kind of took me back to that a bit. So yeah. Next.
I will go. Yeah, this movie, the first one I want to talk about here is from, shit, dude, I don't know what year it is. 2008, it says on IMDb. It's probably right, 2008. And it goes by the title of Bonnie and Clyde vs. Dracula.
You actually watch this?
Yeah, man. So going into this film, I was expecting something pretty fucking bad. You know, I was
as
like,
you would with a title, you know, like that.
Yeah, exactly, right? And what I got was something that kind of took me by surprise. At first I was thinking this movie is going to be really goofy. It's going to have like such a fucking comical overtone to it and, you know, whatever. I was kind of wrong. You know, my pre-assessment of this was completely wrong. So this movie actually doesn't take place in present day. It's not a present day Bonnie and Clyde. It actually takes place in the early 20th century. So all the set pieces and everything is like old school. Right there, it sold me. I was like, wow, the set pieces, everything is actually like pretty good. And I was like, this is fucking crazy. And it's basically your run-of-the-mill Bonnie and Clyde story, except for it has Dracula in it. Bonnie and Clyde obviously do this heist. They're infamous for their doing all their heists. But anyways, this one particular heist goes wrong. And they have to seek shelter at this their doctor friend's place and stuff. And what they don't know is that this doctor is hiding a secret, and he's got like this fucking vampire basically living downstairs and doing all this sorts of weird shit and stuff, which I won't give away. But you know, it's pretty much the gist of the story. Nothing that crazy and stuff. What I got with this movie was an amazing performance by Tiffany Shepis. Man, this is the best acting I've ever seen her do in a film. Fuck, she's really damn good in this. Like, actually, legitimately awesome. As Bonnie, like, she's fucking brutal. She's so heartless and ruthless in this film, but pulls off her accent really good. She never lets it down throughout the film. Everything about her was just phenomenal. But, you know, the overall tone to the film was a lot more serious and darker than I was expecting, like I said.
It's like Hansel and Gretel Get Baked.
Yeah, it was just very surprising. Like, you look at the cover of this movie and you go, fuck, this movie's not going to be serious. I mean, it's not 100% serious. There is a couple comical moments in it, but I think it's also due to the fact that it has, like, almost like a comic book feel to it, with certain scenes, like, where they're shooting, like, their Tommy guns and stuff like that. It just the way it's done, it's not like, you know, like, it just has that type of feel to it, but it, like, in a serious tone, if that makes any sense. Really, really kind of quirky, weird film, like, just to throw that whole Dracula angle in there, with good performances. The guy that plays Clyde in the film, I thought it was really good too, but man, Tiffany Shepis really steals the show in this film. It's worth it to see her, and not only does she get completely buck fucking naked in this movie, it's just so worth that scene alone, but her performance is just great. It's
muffin everything.
Oh yeah, like, oh, she stands right up out of this this little bathtub, and she's completely fucking nude. It's a full frontal shot of her. I was like, wow, that's pretty crazy. But it's definitely worth the watch. I know this is a movie that most people would look at the title and go, I'm gonna pass on by. Right. And I totally
99 out of 100 times I would pass
by. Yeah, you know, and generally I would too, but I remember reading
you wouldn't. You buy the craziest titles ever.
Who's it released by?
This movie's released by, it's really, I don't know. It's like,
it's one of those, huh?
Yeah,
I know those.
It's, what is it? Indikin Pictures.
I know you got it. Family Videos. So
yeah. I'm totally blind. I totally would pick up this movie, but you know, most people wouldn't. And, but the thing is, the reason why I actually wanted to check out this movie, cause I actually read a little blip on the director of this film, Timothy Friend or something like that. I think they did like a little interview with them in a room or a couple years back. And I remember they were doing a piece on this, low budget cinema or whatever the fuck it was. And in the interview itself, it just sounded kind of very intriguing. And I completely had forgot about this film until I saw it in Family Video. I was like, oh, I got to give that one a shot. Plus, anything with Tiffany Shepis in it, I'd try to check out because I absolutely love her. I think she's phenomenal. But, you know.
Without completely embarrassing myself, what's she in? Like, where would I know her from? I don't know that name. I know the name, but I don't know.
Tiffany Shepis is one of the most famous like scream queens, really. Like, she's in a lot of low budget films, but in like a ton of them. I'm trying to think of what you'd know her from. Fucking just looking through her discography. There's so many films that she's been in. This is like ridiculous, dude. You know what? If you saw a picture of her, you would fucking know. You would know.
Okay. I'm so bad with remembering names, man. People come up to me in like Walmart and be like, "Hey, JP, what's going on?" I'll be like,
"Who the fuck are you?"
And I won't know her name.
That's funny. But yeah, if you saw her, what she looked like, and that's another interesting thing about the film. Like, she generally has like, she's a brunette, but in this film, she's got blonde hair, and it really does suit her. It's pretty cool. But yeah, I got to say, this is one of the most surprising films I've watched in a long time. I wouldn't say this is, you know, 100%, you know, everyone's cup of tea.
She's in Sharknado 2.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm serious.
That's awesome.
Are you talking about the second one?
Yeah.
But yeah, if I had to rate this, I would give it a solid 7.5 out of 10. I had a really fun time with this. And like I said, I got to say, like, there's nothing better than blind buying a movie and then it turning out like this. It's one of my favorite feelings in the world. That's why I constantly blind buy things.
Those moments are also like
the pickaxe murder. What I love about
horror in general, just finding being surprised, man.
Yeah, and I was you know talking about the sets and stuff, and that was another thing about this film that really just surprised me. For being such a low budget film, they did a really good job with, you know, the little cash that they had, creating these sets and having these old clothes and like the old like 20s cars and shit. They had like some of those vehicles in the film. I thought was very cool, and the guns and shit, like everything was fucking cool, man. Really interesting film. It's definitely worth the watch.
Am I up?
Yep.
Okay. First film I watch is 2010 horror com titled Rubber, put out by Magnet.
Oh, Rubber.
Have you seen it, Moods?
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie is fucking hilarious. it's basically about this tire who goes on a killing streak, and you basically just follow this tire wreaking havoc.
Is there a lot of social commentary in this film? I think I've heard that before.
Yeah, a little bit. I think there is with, you know,
the spectators. There's spectators. Yeah.
I think there's something to be said there and stuff. But you know what I found fascinating about the film is I read, or maybe, I don't know if there were special features on it, but I can't remember if I watched it or if I read it, but on how they actually did the tire and stuff, like how they, you know, the mechanics that they used. I thought that was really cool how they did that, man. It fucking worked really well.
I love the ending. It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
It's basically just you follow this tire as he rolls down the fucking street in this movie, and he fucks shit up. Yeah, and he fucks shit up. It's actually really.
The tire is a he? Is that?
Yeah, his name is. I think they like call him like Robert in the credits or something like that.
Jesus.
Like some weird name.
I think it's Robert, isn't it? Something like that. I can't even remember. It's been a while. But
yeah, but it's actually a really good horror comedy. You know, there's not many of those.
And it's more of a comedy horror, though, right?
Yeah, and I really haven't heard anybody talk about it recently. I mean, the film's 4 years old, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I think people were talking about it a little bit, but...
I want to say this was released, like, at the same time as Hobo with a Shotgun, like, on video. Was it?
I think it might have been
Magnet, so same with Hobo. So it's fun. It's like Father's Day fun. I'd recommend it. I give it like a 6.5 out of 10. It's nothing brilliant, but it's just a stupid movie. Everyone needs some stupid movies every once in a while.
But it's stupid, but it's quirky, though, man. That whole thing with the audience, like, watching what's going on and stuff is so bizarre.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's when like, you it really doesn't think
need
about
to be, it. It doesn't need to be there, but it's there.
You know, you know what it kind of reminded me of? It reminded me of, like, a really, almost like a comical version of, like, a fucking David Lynch film.
Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, like a satire crowd or something? Like, I really don't know much about this film.
I don't think it's much of a satire.
I don't know.
I really didn't think about it for once. You know, I just fucking put it on. I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this and not overthink it like I fucking do everything lately.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
It's something that I'll eventually grab.
Check it out. You can get it for dirt cheap.
It's definitely worth the watch, though. I mean, I've actually watched it a couple times. I think it's pretty cool. I think my one complaint with the film is I wish that there was a little more, like, actual kills in it and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like, he kills, like, rabbits and crows, the fucking bird. But he doesn't, like, kill any, like, people, like, almost towards the end of the movie.
But
he blows up this guy's head, and it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
It's really fun. Check it out. I already said 6.5 out of 10.
Oh, all right. Alrighty. My turn?
Yep. All
right. The second film I watched is 1980s Terror Train, starring Jamie Lee Curtis. This film follows a group of college, seniors. I'm not really sure what the hell they are. They are having a New Year's Eve party on a train, and they had pranked a person 3 years earlier and caused him to have like a mental breakdown, and they think that this guy has come back wearing different masks on the train, because it's kind of like a mask party. I don't know what you'd call it, like a costume party on the train, and he's, you know, picking people off and stuff. It's basically his story. This one, I don't know. I didn't really care for it too much. I didn't not like it, but I didn't love it either. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I really like the fact that the killer is changing masks all the time.
I liked that too, but I almost thought they could have did it a bit more. Like it seems like they kind of abandoned it at times. Like it just,
yeah.
I don't know. I wish every person he kills, he like would, you know, take their mask, and they made more of a point of it. You know, I've said it once and I've said it again. Jamie Lee,
I know where you're going.
Is overrated, and I think this film shows it, because she's just another
bitch.
Scream queen. You know, here, like, you could replace her with anybody from the same era, and it'd be the same exact film. I really didn't find her too awesome at all. I don't know, man. Maybe some better kills or something. This one would have spiced it up a bit. Overall, I didn't really care for like any of the characters. It was really bad. There's like a whole magic show going on at the same time.
Actually, David Copperfield.
Is that really David Copperfield?
That is no doubt. That's David Copperfield.
That 100%. Is awesome. That just made me like it a little bit more, to be honest. You know, and that's something that is a whole other topic, that you know, magic is dead. Like, I remember when I was a kid, like, magic specials were like an event. It was like a huge thing.
What about clowns, man?
Clowns?
Clowns are dead.
Are they? I wasn't aware. So yeah, I mean, I think people like Chris Angel was like killed magic, but that's a whole other topic. I really like
David Blaine, man.
I still like David Blaine, because the he's not doing things like flying across like 7 buildings, like, you know, he's like levitating like 2, like, you know, 5 inches off the ground and then falling back down. Like, you got Chris Angel doing like crazy ass shit. It's just so unbelievable that, you know, you're taking the mystery away from it, and you're like, this guy's a dick. But anyway, back to Terror Train. I think that, you know, now that it's David Copperfield, it kind of like, because I was gonna say that they focused on that a bit too much, but shit, David Copperfield's awesome. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that now. I don't, you know, the train setting I thought could have been a little bit cooler. Like, I didn't really feel like we was in the train the whole time. I don't know, man. It just, there's like issues with it. I didn't really get into it too much. The characters sucked, like I said. It just felt like you're kind of at slightly above average 80s slasher. There's so many better slashers than Terror Train. But I give it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, you know, the very end, I won't say anything about the end of the film, but just the way it goes down, I literally bust a gut every time at that scene.
It's so ridiculous. It's like,
it makes me laugh. That's so hard.
Like,
Jesus. Every time I watch it, the whole movie's worth watching just for that scene alone, because it's so fucking funny.
It's still not like a good ending, though. It's just...
No, it's not, but it's the way it goes down. It's so funny, man.
Yeah, it is funny. Unintentionally funny.
Yeah, oh, totally unintentionally.
And that's why it's funny. And I'll get into that a little later.
Just thinking about it right now is making bringing us problems.
Yeah, Terror Train. What like thinking back, like what would you probably rate Terror Train?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I find that a lot of the characters are kind of bland. You don't really care too much about them. I'd probably give it, you know, 6.5, 7, 2. I always found it was kind of a little lackluster.
I liked that it was set on New Year's Eve, though. Like, that was cool. I wish they would have, you know, made that more of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alrighty. So that's it for Terror Train?
Yep.
All right, so the second film I watched this week is another family video pickup. this is from 2011. This movie is from the Philippines, and it's called The Road. So it's not the one with Viggo Mortensen.
That road was actually filmed like 5 minutes away from where I live for sections of the film. But the other road, the one that from the U.S.
When the fuck did you grab this? I don't remember you buying this.
I don't know. I think it was one of the last places that we went to actually grab this one. I remember, again, this was another film that I'd read like a little blip on it and completely forgot about it.
Okay. I know where you got this.
Yeah, I remember, and I was like, oh, yeah, The Road. Totally.
They were giving you a hard time about it. Yeah, I remember now.
Yeah. it's from the Philippines. And this is actually a pretty interestingly structured film. It's done in like three different parts. Basically, in the first part of the film, it's about these, you know, these three kind of teenagers or whatnot. They're about 16 years old, and they steal one of their mom's vehicles, and they go for like a joyride down this side road, kind of basically what it is. It's like off the main kind of interstate type thing. I don't know what the hell you want to call it, but anyways, they go on into this, you know, kind of secluded.
It's like
road.
A back road.
Yeah, it is basically kind of like a back road thing.
We got a lot of those.
Yeah, and so they're fucking driving around in there, and all of a sudden this car kind of pulls up to them and starts fucking with them a little bit, and they're kind of obviously freaking out because there's nobody back there. There shouldn't be anybody back there at all. Anyways, it doesn't turn out too well for these three teenagers. They end up getting killed, and then basically what it is, it's like a police investigation. It's a lot to do with police investigation in this film, and so this is the first part of the film, and then the second part, during the police investigation, they actually find a burnt up car back in these bushes and stuff, and it has a body in there. And it's from this girl that went missing about 10 years prior. And so they start investigating this and linking these new dead kids to this one and stuff like that. And then it kind of tells the story of how these sisters and stuff, how it went down in the second part for them. And then so it goes through that, and it's almost done like almost like in an anthology style in three different parts, but it's all one film. Anyways, and then the third part, you learn who the killer is.
This one actually sounds very, very interesting to me.
Yeah, well, you actually learn who the killer is in the second part. And then the third part actually goes back even further. It goes back 10 more years to 1988, and when he's a little boy, and it shows him like how he grew up and why he was actually like that, because his mom was like the sadistic fucking bitch, and she really controlled his father and shit like that, and then certain things go down and stuff. And so it shows the killer like when he was a kid and stuff. And this is the way the film's structured. It's actually in parts, like I said. It literally says part one and then part two, part three. And then throughout the whole film, it's like this police investigation that's going on and stuff. And it's a very, very interesting film. It's long. This one runs about 110 minutes. So it's just under 2 hours.
I love how 110 minutes is long these days.
Well, for a horror film, that is actually quite long.
Well, don't watch In the Void, because that's like fucking 3 hours.
Yeah, dude, like 90 minutes is...
I don't have a problem with long films. It's just, you know, if they're done properly, right?
Yeah.
But this one, it you know, I
is
I find
it?
That...
That's the question I want to know.
What's up?
Should it be the length that it is?
I think it probably could have been trimmed down a little bit. I think some of the stuff that they're showing...
Entity probably... was fucking 2 hours.
Yeah, that's a good movie, though. Like, I mean, that's like 2 hours of...
That movie, I believe we mentioned that.
Yeah.
It like fit the time.
Yeah. But yeah, so this one, I think there, you know, a little bits in the second part I thought could have been trimmed down, maybe some in the third part and stuff, you know, taking 10, 15 minutes off. But overall, it's a really interesting film with, you know, I really watch a lot of films from the Philippines. It just doesn't seem like a place that puts out a lot of films, but I'm sure they do. But yeah, very cool film. Love the structure. The story was very interesting and intriguing. Really good acting all around, man. I thought everyone did a really good job in this. It was shot well. It was actually edited pretty cool, too.
Man, I'm going to have to keep my eye out for this one.
Yeah, it was really good. Like, I really enjoyed it. I watched it with the wife, and she's like, yeah, very cool film. And it was interesting, too, because I threw this movie on, and she had no intentions of watching it. And then it sucked to read in within 5 minutes, and she ended up watching, like, the whole two-hour film with me. So just put it that way, right? But yeah, I highly recommend The Road. It's really good. I'd probably give it about an 8 out of 10.
Damn, nice.
Yeah, it's just a really – I love the structure. It was so damn cool how they did it, how it just kept going back 10 years, and it was interesting. So I nice. Recommend it.
All right, man.
All right. So the second film I watched this week is a film I decided to rewatch. I watched it when it first came out. I was like, I'm going to check this out again. And it's Adam Green's best film, in my opinion, Frozen.
I 100% agree with you on that one, man.
Yeah. That's so funny. That's so funny because my buddy came over on Friday and we were watching films and stuff. And he's like, hey, man. He's like, I watched Frozen the other night.
And he's like, wait, is this the same buddy that watched Behind the Mask with you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, and this is funny because I actually watched those films really close together when I first seen them both.
That's interesting. And he's like, what do you think of Frozen? I'm like, to be honest, I think it's Adam Green's best made film.
Yeah, it is. It's so good. It's so basic, but it's done so well. Basically about these three people who are skiers and snowboarders, I guess you could say. And they're on this mountain, and it's starting to get dark out. And I think it's a Friday, so the mountain's closing for the weekend. And they talk the ski lift guy into giving them one more run.
Which is totally believable, how all that goes down.
Yeah, and what actually totally gets... What happens is they get stuck on the ski lift because the ski resort's closed. They think that they
come. And it's a Sunday and it doesn't open until a Friday.
Yeah. So they think that because it closed, they think that, you know, these three guys, two guys and a girl, you know, made it down to the bottom and, you know, they go home.
It's just a series of mistakes and unfortunate events that lead them stuck up there.
So they're stuck on this ski lift and the film's basically them trying to survive. And when the first guy tries to make a call for help, that scene just makes me fucking cringe so badly.
I thought scene was so well acted, the whole thing.
So nasty. So fucking nasty. And having someone that like happened that with my arm, my fucking bone popping out like that, it fucking just made me cringe so bad, but it was so well done. And from that moment on, it's just...
Yeah, you don't want to say too much more because it kind of gives away the key moments of the film.
You should really check out Frozen. It's so fucking solid. I gave it like a 7.5 out of 10. It's really good.
Yeah, my rating would probably even be higher. I loved Frozen. It was one of my favorite films of that year. It was such a surprise for me. I blind bought it just because I seen Adam Green's name on it and I knew he did Hatchet. And I was just in love. And I still love that film. It was all filmed, you know. I think there was only like one or two scenes that are not filmed on the actual ski lift, you know, sitting there like out in the cold. Like it's so legit. I highly, highly recommend you guys check out the behind the scenes stuff and the commentary on that disc. It's one of my favorite commentaries and behind the scenes stuff that I've seen.
Yeah. That film's fucking fantastic.
Solid film, man. I agree. Yeah.
That's exactly how you make a film with a bunch of people sitting around, stuck in one location and talking. That's exactly how you do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Good dialogue.
Yeah.
Goes a great long dialogue. Way.
Yeah. Great dialogue. Great believable characters. Sean Ashmore is awesome. I love the dynamic of like the bro versus like the girl. Like it all feels very natural, and I've been in situations like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So I just had my pick of the week, and I know you guys could talk about one more. So go ahead.
Okay. My next film, as I stated last week, I'm going through the catalog of one Wesley Earl Craven, you know, or Abe Snake, if you want to, you know, go down that road. So yeah, I decided to pull out a film that I actually now have two copies of because it's the first time that I, you know, accidentally bought two things.
He pulled a Jeremy on this one.
Yeah, I've never done that in my life. You know, I've always known what I've had in my collection.
I bought three copies of Kill List.
I picked up Cursed, which I actually already own but haven't watched. So yeah, Cursed. This one was from 2005. Kevin Williamson written, Wes Craven directed, the Weinstein Company produced. This film follows a brother and a sister, Christine Ricci and Jesse Eisenberg, I believe, are attacked one night by a werewolf in the Hollywood Hills. And they are both infected with the Mark of the Beast, you know, the virus, the curse, if you will. And they're basically now more elite. They're you know, stronger, faster, have better sex appeal, and they're dealing with Jesse Eisenberg's kind of still in high school, who's dealing with his shit. And then
it's kind of hard for Jesse Eisenberg to have sex appeal, I'm sorry to say. He's like the least sex appeal dude.
He's the least sexy male guy for you,
I guess. I guess you could say it. he just doesn't
note look taken
like, he just doesn't look like somebody that gets laid all the time.
No, well, Christina Ricci is like more in the professional world. She works for like some, you know, TV production or some shit. And basically they get better at stuff, and then they have to deal with the fact that they're werewolves and try to find the like head werewolf who's like after them and shit. Actually not 100% bad. I actually kind of liked it at certain times. There's one scene in particular that was like painful to sit through, and it was when Jesse Eisenberg's at school and he, like, the wrestling jock, like, kind of fucks with him. And those scenes were painful to watch to begin with because it's like, hey, fag. Like, it's that jock, you know, the jock that's like so overdone. And it's like so, yeah, it's so stereotypical, like, ridiculous, like fake high school jock. Like, those people really don't exist like that.
No.
It's like the guy with the switchblade, you know, like those guys don't exist. The guys that carry around the switchblades with their leather jacket, they don't exist. I don't know if they existed back then. They don't exist anymore. So it's kind of like one of those characters. And he's in a wrestling like match, and he's doing all these like suplexes and shit, and I'm just like, get the fuck out. Just stop, okay? This is absolutely ridiculous. You officially like broke any trust I have in you because how ridiculous this shit is. It's insane. And everybody's like looking at it like, oh my god, like it's real. Like that, like something like that could really happen. Yeah, that scene was painful to watch. But I mean, honestly, you know, it has its moments, it has its bad moments. I didn't hate it. I do know that this film had a terrible production, like just a bad. It was years, I believe, of just problems. And there was like a lot of people were supposed to be in it, like Skeet Ulrich and a few other people that were popular around this time, you know, post Scream era. I forget some of the other names, but a lot of people were attached, and I believe scenes were even filmed. They had to reshoot, all kind of crazy shit happened.
Director's cut.
But no, you gotta get the unrated cut though, because there's some gore in there. There's some CGI, and actually the werewolf doesn't look half bad at times. Other times it's CGI, but
was this a pure garbage for kids under 13 when it came out?
It was, but honestly, if I didn't know that, I wouldn't have been able to tell in the unrated. I would have thought it was a regular R-rated film if, you know, by the unrated cut. So, you know, it's definitely not one of Wes Craven's fine points, but I don't think it's his worst. So 6 out of 10 on Cursed from 2005.
I should humor myself one day and actually watch this movie. I've had it sitting around here for a while.
There's some painful moments in there, dude.
I know, I've heard. Yeah. But you
can tell that there was possibly a good movie somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 6 out of 10 you gave it?
Yeah, I actually liked it more than most people probably, because
yeah, I was a little surprised by that rating.
I think some of the scenes work really well. Like there's a scene where when they first get attacked by the werewolf, and I think that scene's done really well. It kind of has a cool mood to it, you know. Yeah.
Coolio with the flow. All right. Yeah, my next film that I watched this week was one that I was curious about when it first came out, released by Anchor Bay. I believe this came out last year, 2013. It was because Daniel Harris and Robert Patrick were in the film, so that piqued my interest right there. And it's called The Black Waters of Echo Pond.
Yeah, I recently picked this up also.
I have it too.
Yeah, I thought it sounded pretty cool, but kind of generic at the same time, really.
I could tell you don't like it already.
It's a pretty cool title. I like that title.
Yeah, it's a pretty decent title, I guess. Basically, you know, you get the backstory in the beginning of the film, which I won't even get into.
Moots hates this movie, I could just tell.
you get like a little bit of backstory. But anyways, it centers around like your, I think it's like 9 characters or something. They all go out to this remote islands. Basically, they go to, you know, do some partying on this fucking island and stuff. The house that they're staying at is owned by Robert Patrick's character. But anyways, I think it's one of the
characters. Wish I just had an island I could roll up to.
Yeah, it's one of the characters. It's their Robert Patrick is the uncle or whatever. So anyways, they go out there and they set up shop in this place.
Anyways, was Daniel Harris actually in this movie?
Yeah, she's actually in the movie the whole film.
Okay.
Which was awesome because she's so fucking hot. Yeah, but man. She's
hotter in real life.
Yeah, I
can just imagine. Really short, isn't she?
Yeah, I was like standing next to her when I met her, and she was like up to like my shoulder.
Yeah, that's awesome. So anyways, you got these 9 characters, and you can tell right away that a lot of these characters have issues with each other. And anyways, so they end up finding this board game inside this house, and basically this board game is like from
Jumanji.
It's like from these ancient times, shit like that. But this game kind of has a mind of its own. It's kind of possessed, really. And what the point of this board game, what it does to people, it kind of brings out.
Does Robin Williams come out of it?
Robin Williams, awesome.
I love Jumanji, man. That movie holds a place in my heart.
I like Jumanji also.
It was a cool film. So anyways, this board game, as they're playing it, it kind of starts getting like a mind of its own and stuff. And it almost seems to possess people to do things that they probably otherwise wouldn't, and also say things and, you know, think things. The game is kind of twisting their minds a little bit, and it's making these people think things that is going to make them do things to other people in a bad way and stuff, if that makes any sense. So it's kind of fucking with them. It's totally fucking with them, because all these friends already have issues, and this game is just bringing it out of them. You know, and basically it turns into a fucking bloodbath. Characters start killing off other characters because of things that they've done in the past or what they thought they did and whatnot. So that's kind of the whole premise of the film right there. You know, it's entertaining. It was pretty entertaining. There were some pretty decent kills. Daniel Harris is, you know, beautiful throughout the whole film. Fucking awesome. Robert Patrick really isn't in the film a lot until the end, and he's pretty fucking kick-ass at the end, though. But, you know, the fucking very end of this film ruined the entire movie. It just ruined it, because it was actually quite entertaining. Like, to be honest, a lot of the characters you didn't really like that much, because, you know, the things that they supposedly have done and stuff was just making them look like douches pretty much the entire... Like, everyone was like that. Daniel Harris was pretty cool, though. Like, her character was pretty solid, but... you know, a lot of the characters don't really care too much about, but it's one of those things that, you know, after everything goes down and then the very end happens and you're like, fuck off, really? Like, that's the way, that's what, that's
did you say that out loud? Was he like, fuck off?
I did. I said, fuck off.
I know that exact, that when you say fuck off to the movie, like out loud, like I know that.
If they didn't have that fucking stupid ass ending, it's actually not.
Now, was there room to end it in a better way? Like, did you think of something and you're like, it would be way better if you did this?
Yeah, totally. If they just didn't do what they did. You know, it's so easy to avoid this disaster. And it was such a letdown. It was such a letdown. And like I said, like, you know, some of the kills are pretty damn good. It got bloody and it got pretty gory. It was all practical effects and stuff, which was pretty cool. And, but you know, it's just some of the characters and stuff. I don't know, man. I can get past that a little bit, but you do learn things about certain characters towards the end that kind of you know, plays with you. There's a little bit of twists and turns with them and stuff, and you're just like, oh god, that guy is such a fucking asshole. But yeah, it's the end, man. It really ruins it. But up until that point, you know, it's not so, so bad. I heard a lot of bad things about this one. I think the consensus on this one was that it had a bad ending. I can't quite remember what people were saying. You know, it's worth a watch, though. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it after you watch it, JP.
I'll get on that one. But, you know, what's funny about the title of Black Waters of Echo's Pond is I actually have a place near me called Echo Hollow. And there's a lot of sulfur in the water, so it makes it look red. And I always thought it'd be funny to make a Red Waters of Echo Hollow.
Nice. One thing I did like the setting of the film, though, like this, you know, this house on this island. I think it takes place in Maine, I believe, or something like that.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty cool. Like, the setting was cool. And just the idea of being on this secluded island. I mean, it doesn't really make a difference, I think, where they set this movie, to be honest, but it was a decent setting anyways. And there was some pretty decent atmosphere, like when they're outside and stuff, like, you know, when things weren't going down inside the house. But it was not bad, but it's definitely worth the watch, in my opinion. But just don't be surprised when the end happens. That's okay. All I can say, man.
Note taken.
If I had to rate it, I give it about a 6.5. Entertainment value.
Is there a lesbo scene in this movie?
I was entertained with it. Yep.
With Danielle Harris?
Well, yeah, I guess.
I haven't seen it in a while.
You have seen this movie?
A long time ago. Like, I think it came out in, like, 2009. I think that's, like...
Is that when it actually got released, in 2009?
No, I think he might have seen it somewhere else. I don't think it hit disc until...
You're right. It says it was released in 2009, but yeah, it hit DVD in 2013.
I remember Danny.
There's a funny fucking part, man, involving some chick's fake titties. Oh man, I laughed so hard in it. It was so funny. And yeah. So yeah, you know, 6.5, probably appropriate. It's, you know, it was entertaining, so that's all it counts.
$5 million budget, it better be pretty fucking entertaining. All right, I just have pick of the week, so... Oh, yeah, we're at pick of the weeks now. So, am I going to go?
Yep.
All right, so my pick of the week is a movie that I actually picked up a while ago, and you guys are going to fucking hate me. But I finally popped it into my Blu-ray player to check out how the PQ and everything is, and that's John Carpenter's Christine. Yes.
Wow.
Silence. Silence on the end of...
Fantastic film.
Yeah, yeah, but y'all, from the wonderful company that is Twilight Times.
How is the transfer?
It's actually really good, actually. It's not the best, but for the high premium that Twilight Time charges for their movies, it's definitely not worth it, but...
good for you.
This is so disappointing, man. Like,
it's just good to have it, because it's worth like $100 now, so...
Sell that shit.
Nah, I'm going to keep it, because...
And then when it gets re-released, then you're going to be like, no, yep. I got this stupid Twilight Times version with no special features.
No, there's some and special features.
Sweet-ass fucking new version that's going to be all awesome. You're going to have to buy that one.
Yeah, but Christine follows this nerd who buys this car and is totally trashed, and it's, of course, the car is possessed, and the car starts to change him into this badass, and that's basically the film.
And the thing about Christine, it's not about the car, which, I think helps with a lot of people.
It's about the dude.
Yeah, it's about the de-evolution of this character and how he becomes, like, a douchebag.
Yeah, he becomes a huge fucking douche.
Kind of a badass, too.
Yeah, but you kind of hate him, though, because he's fucking such a douchebag.
Yeah, you do really
love Christine.
Yeah, but it's not your typical John Carpenter film. There's not the kills and there's not the gore, but...
It's a really good book, man.
Yeah.
It's a good book.
Now, you know the scene where the guy, where he buys the car and you see, like, the history of, like, the guy, you can tell there was something going on. Do they go into that in the book? Because I always thought that would be a cool movie. Like, knowing, like, what all happened with the car before he got it. Before our lead character gets it.
Well, it was on the... Don't you see that in the beginning of the film when it's, like, on the assembly?
Yeah, but that's the only one segment of the car's history. There's a lot of time in between that.
Yeah. I don't know. You have to ask Moots. I haven't read the book.
Oh man, I haven't read it in so many years. I just remember loving the book, though. Honestly, like I've forgotten certain details from the book.
To yeah, once again, like last week when we were talking about Stephen King, man.
Yep.
It's fucking solid, yep. Solid. 5%
at least, guys.
Like I said, not your typical John Carpenter film, but it's really good. Give it like an 8.5 out of 10.
I think this is one of John Carpenter's best, actually. Like in terms of just. It looks so good, man.
Yeah.
It's shot so well. I love this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's solid. Check it out.
Yeah. Christine, what did you rate it?
Yeah, 8.5 out of 10.
Ooh, that's a high-ass rating.
Well, it's a good fucking movie. What would you rate it?
I don't know. I've probably rated it before, back when I was doing out of fives.
Yeah.
So I don't know now. I have to rewatch it.
All right. Who wants to go next?
I believe it's my turn, actually, right?
Yep.
Yep.
So I did something a little different this week. Atrocious was going to be my pick of the week. But I felt more strongly about this film, so I made this film my avoid of the week. This is the first time we've done an avoid of the week. And it is the worst horror movie ever made from 2005.
A void of the week?
Yeah. So,
is it that bad?
So
holy fuck, I gotta get in on this action. I always have like 3 or 4 of those per week.
Yeah, but
this was actually my idea of like in the beginning of the show's history. Nobody wanted to do a shit pick of the week.
Yeah, I didn't want to do it every week, but I thought if you felt more strongly about a certain film in a negative way than you did about a film in a positive way out of the ones you watched, I thought this would be fitting. And this is the first time where it's actually came out to be like this. Because mm-hmm. I really liked Atrocious, but I feel more strongly about this film in a negative way than I do about Atrocious in a positive way. So the thing is, this is not the worst horror movie ever made, first of all. That goes to Beneath the Mississippi, which I'm still waiting for somebody to like come up to me and be like, oh, I finally watched Beneath the Mississippi. Why has nobody watched this yet? Am I the only guy in the world?
You might actually be, dude.
I've never heard anybody else talk about it. So anyway,
go on Amazon, you'll find someone.
Yeah, all right. The worst horror movie ever made. This is from a guy who I guess does these things, and this is exactly what I was talking about last week, where it's somebody who set out to make a bad movie. Because then if you set out to make a bad movie and it's bad, you can just say, well, I was trying to make it bad, and you don't like, it's like no responsibility for you know, your art. Like it's like you're just making excuses on not being a good filmmaker. You, like, why don't you try to make a good movie? Like this guy, man, this film, okay, for one, it's way goddamn too long. It's like over shit. It was like an hour and a half left after it was like 15 minutes in or something. I was like, are you kidding me? When I checked the time, I was like, this feels like I'm starting from the scratch and I already sat through this shit for 15 minutes. So what kind of ego do you have where you feel like your film can't be cut down? And this film, how do you feel that this film cannot be cut down at all? Like, what are you talking about, dude? This is crazy to me that this film is that long. It's terrible. And it's not terrible in like a, it's just stupid. It's the idea. Okay. Let me be honest. There are some okay funny moments sprinkled throughout, but they do not like justify the stuff that he's doing. Like he's trying to be like really, really offensive with, you know, gay shit and you know, Muslim shit and stuff like that. Stuff that would be funny in a South Park episode because it's done clever. This is just done bad and annoying. Also, there's plenty of TNA and vajayjay, which is, you know, is one of the only things that kind of make the film like he knows what he's doing. You know, he's putting it in every nice. a lot, because nobody would sit through this shit if it wasn't in there. The story goes, it's ludicrous. Like you know he's trying to make a bad movie and stuff. It's called the worst movie ever made. It's just a bunch of scene to scene just like spitballing ideas, whatever he came up with, let's write it down. There's a giant spider, and then there's, you know, bee zombies, and then there's fucking this and that. But it's all stupid. It's literally anything anybody could come up with, and this guy just decided to shoot it. It really, really kind of pissed me off that people do this. Like, why try to set out to make a bad movie? Why not try to make a good movie? It just, I don't get the idea behind it. It's like, as long as you just automatically have an excuse when it's bad. Like, oh, well, I wasn't trying to make it good. It's like, well, fuck, dude. Like, I don't even know what to say to you, man. Like, yeah, you're trying to make a bad movie. Congratulations, you dickhead.
You dickhead.
Yeah, like, I don't like this shit, dude. It kind of, this is the stuff that you run into. It, like, I didn't buy this, thank God. I got it in a contest. But you know what? Honestly, if you make this a 60-minute movie, take out all the bullshit, there was enough funny things in here to make the movie to where it could have actually been something. Not something good necessarily, but it could have been something instead of just nothing, and it's just stupid. And this guy, I don't know him personally, and obviously, but I can't imagine that I would get along with him. Because from what I understand, all of his movies are like this.
Huh. Interesting.
That's it?
Yeah.
I give it a 1.5 out of 10.
1.5 out of 10?
Like I said, there was things in there, which is even more annoying. It's more annoying that you covered it in shit, dude. Like, you take your movie and you try to make it bad. When you have, I can see you have potential to create funny stuff if you just actually try, bud. Just try a little bit. Try to make a good movie, man, and maybe I'll come back to your films and I'll give you some props. But, you know, come on, man. Jesus Christ. It's silly, dude.
Damn. I really wanted to check that one out, too.
Check it out, dude. I would love to hear your opinions on it.
Maybe someday. Alrighty, so my pick of the week here.
Oh, and he remade this film. There's the worst horror movie ever made remake. It's actually titled that.
Shut the fuck up, really?
Yep.
That's so awesome. Okay, so yeah, my pick of the week is from 1987. And it's a film called Central Park Drifter.
Central Park Drifter?
Yeah, also known as, Graveyard Shift. Yeah, this is kind of a unique, different type vampire film. It's really cool, actually. The premise is neat because it actually really does work. So it follows your main character. He's a cab driver working the night shift, and he's also a vampire. Now, I think that really works in general because that's like such a perfect setup for a vampire. You know, he's already picking up people, you know, right there. You don't have to lure them in. They're coming to you working the night shift. I think it's such a cool premise.
Yeah, I like it. That's sounds cool, man.
Yeah. And of course this is set in New York. So it's got that really dirty, grimy.
Really? What year did this come out?
87.
It's a Stephen King movie, dude.
Wait, what is it?
No, you're thinking Graveyard Shift.
Didn't you say, what's this one
also
called?
Also known as Graveyard Shift.
Oh, okay.
It's titled Central Park Drifter.
Okay.
But yeah, so anyways, this vampire, he's a cab driver, works the night shift. And what he does is he actually lures in women that are kind of troubled and stuff. So like these women that are basically on their way out. And what I mean by that, women that are like suicidal and just having a rough go in life and stuff. He actually turns them into vampires and tries to save them that way.
Because who wouldn't want to be a vampire?
Well, that's the thing, right? But he also needs these people to live off of too. So what he does is he turns like a bunch of women into vampires and stuff. And for himself to survive, he actually has to like, you know, suck on, you know, their blood and stuff like that after he's turned. It's kind of interesting. So he takes these troubled women. He's not just killing innocent people, but he takes these troubled women, turns them into vampires. And he's like the lord of the underworld. Like he runs this whole underworld of vampires and stuff. And these women basically do his dirty work for him and stuff like that. It's very cool. But he unfortunately makes the mistake of like falling in love with like a human. This movie's got like a very sexual overtone, you know, undertone, anything you want to, you know, it's very sexual and stuff.
As most vampire films are.
Exactly, right? So, but, you know, this human woman, she is like a record producer or whatever. She is married, but she's got this husband that's like a total douchebag and she's kind of estranged from him. They live together, but they're like not together and stuff like that. It's kind of a really weird vibe that you get from this. I've never really seen that in a film before. It felt so awkward at times. But anyways, like she finds out in the film that she is actually dying. They never even say what she's dying from. Like she gets these test results back from this doctor and she's fucking dying. But, you know, him being a vampire, so if he can sense that, he picks her up in the cab one night and he knows right away that she's dying. But he doesn't want to turn her because he's, like, fallen in love with her. And that's kind of one of the things. Once he's turned women into vampires, he can no longer love them.
Right? This is a little new mythology.
Yeah, it's so weird. So, like, that's why he doesn't turn her. He wants to save her.
There's new stuff.
Yeah, so he wants to save her, you know, by turning her into a vampire and making her immortal. But at the same time, he knows that he can't love her if he does. It's very interesting. It's very cool. Very cool premise and stuff. But yeah, I'll just like.
How's it New York setting? Like, is it like, it's very New York-y or no?
Yeah, you get glimpses of it and stuff, but it is pretty cool though. Like, you know, the 1987, he's driving like the old school cabs, like, you know, like the ones from like the 60s and 50s. It's really cool, man. I really like that. The movie's pretty much all set at nighttime, obviously, because, well, he's a vampire. Awesome. He's a vampire. So, but yeah, very, very fucking cool film. It's got some pretty decent gore and stuff in it. I really like the whole kind of I guess love story and deal. The whole thing, like when it goes down with like her husband, you know, and the end of the film, it's a little weird. But you know, it didn't really matter to me. I thought the atmosphere in this film was so great. So great. Really great soundtrack too. Really great 80s kind of synth soundtrack and stuff. Kind of dark feeling. Yeah, it just has all those really good 80s qualities.
This sounds like something I'd really like.
Yeah, I think you'd really enjoy this. Like I said, the storyline's kind of, I just, when I read the back of this movie and it said vampire working as a cab driver in New York, I was like, I didn't even read the rest of it. I picked it up. I was like, that's awesome. I think that just works so well. It's so perfect, right? But highly recommend this film, man. I mean, it's, I got this for fucking dirt ass cheap. It's actually released by Shriek Show. And the funny thing is, when I picked this up, I didn't even know it was a Shriek Show release. This is a really old release, though.
You said that it was mostly, it was like all at night.
Pretty much all shot at nighttime. See, yeah.
That's something that I don't think is done enough anymore either. I remember watching Laid to Rest, and I really noticed that. Like, it's all like one night, like all at night. Like, I like that. I like movies that do that. That's cool.
Yeah, it's not set over like one night either. It's set over like a time period, but almost every scene's at night. Like, they show him going to sleep and stuff, but, you know, when they show him again, he's working the night shift, and, you know, it's cool, man, because the vampire, like, you know, he's like a regular dude. Like, he's in his coffee shop, like, eating food and stuff, and it's really weird. It's really weird, but highly enjoyed it, man. I thought it was really kind of unique, and I'm glad that I just took a chance on this blind buy. It was only like $3, so kind of a score deal. But yeah, if I had to rate it, I'd give it an 8 too. Even though it's my pick of the week, I gave it the same as The Road. But I really enjoyed this one because it's got that perfect 80s kind of tone to it, you know? It's really good in that aspect. So, yeah.
And
it has quite a few boobs in the movie too, by the way.
I love New York setting, so that instantly makes me like it. Also, really quickly, the worst horror movie ever made. I might have come off a bit as a dick, but I just would so much rather see what this guy can actually do, like, because I did see things in there, you know, the 1.5 rating. And we'll just disclaimer on that, like, I didn't mean to like insult the guy too much.
Yeah. Alrighty. So.
Alright. So that is our films that we watched this week and the pick of the weeks. So. Slash
Void of the Week.
slash Void of the Week, which is a 1.5, which is one of the lowest ratings that has been given.
Yeah, I wouldn't even put that in my top 5 worst horror movies ever made, though.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
Alright. So now we're gonna hop into the new Scream Factory release of Dead Shadows, right?
Yes.
Dead Shadows. This is the new chiller.
2012.
This is the new chiller film that was released.
No, it's not chiller. I don't think it's chiller.
No.
Well, I guess I was a shithead watching it then. All right, JP, get the synopsis.
How about I flip it on you this time and let you give the synopsis?
Okay, so it's about this guy whose parents died, and the same day that his parents died, they see this comet coming to Earth, and I guess it's like everyone's going to party for this comic coming, and apocalypse starts happening, and people start acting strangely, and shit starts to go down because of this comet. That's about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird things about this movie, man. Like, he, beginning of the movie, it kind of gives this, like, really brief backstory to, you know, Chris's parents dying, you know, from... Now, did they say, is it from the comet, or did they just happen to die on that day?
I guess it would be kind of implied that they died from the comet,
and it's
if it
weird
was the
because,
same day.
I know, it's weird, because it doesn't really actually straight up tell you. But yeah. I thought the backstory is kind of was really weird, but then it just jumps into, I believe it's, what, 11 years later?
Yeah, 11 years later.
And now there's, like, another comet that's, you know...
Coming,
and all
is it the same comet?
No, it's a new comet.
You know, it's a different comet. And then all of a sudden, people start acting all fucking weird and stuff. This one is... fuck. there's a lot of plot holes in this film. There's a lot of things that aren't explained.
Mm-hmm.
That I noticed. I've watched this movie twice now, and I fucking thought that I missed something the first time.
Yeah, see, I was thinking watching it twice was going to help you.
Yeah, and there's plot holes, man. Like, okay, there's certain things that are just not explained in this film at all. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, it's just so easy. This movie's so short. It's 75 minutes long.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of
plot
holes.
Yeah, and I was actually going to say... That was one of the positives that I had was that this film didn't have enough to be longer,
I mean,
so they kept it shorter.
It's the guy's first film. I got to give him some kind of credit about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's his first movie. It can't be a fucking Oscar masterpiece.
I just wish.
Yeah,
that they
but
had
I don't think that's a fair criticism to say like it's.
I'm not. I'm not saying it's a fair criticism, but it's the first movie that this guy's written too. It's like, I mean, they're just starting.
Can't okay,
be,
well.
Yeah. I just tend to not look at that when I look at film too much.
Yeah. I'm gonna start with my positives on the film. I like Johnny. I thought Johnny was fucking cool. He was the so-called Canadian in the film. I thought he was pretty badass. He was pretty cool.
You're just saying that because he's from Canada, Leo.
No, trust me, I'm not. He'd be from Quebec, so. But anyway,
guy from Saw. Come on.
Yeah. This is This, what is this, French? This is a French film, right?
Yeah, this is from France. Other things I did like, I thought the soundtrack was fucking awesome. I really liked the music.
Yeah, I actually did too.
Yeah, it was really good. For the most part, there was practical effects in this,
really?
But there was a lot of CGI.
Bit of CGI, dude.
No. There was a lot of practical effects, but there was a lot of CGI.
Yeah,
and some bad CGI too. I'm gonna say that, but there was
CGI.
I thought that the scene where the girl was like melting away, I thought that was kind of cool. I just
that
wish
was
they had
probably one of my
that was my favorite
effects.
That was my favorite effect in the movie.
Yeah, I just wish they had it done it like, you know, showed it a little longer. You know, it kind of gets it's just too quick in the film.
Yeah, it's not like Hellraiser, but it's cool.
Yeah, but it was still cool. It was cool to see that.
Well, nothing's like Hellraiser besides the incredible melting man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to. I think that's probably all my pauses on this one.
That's
Jeremy,
not very much.
Let's hear from Jeremy a little bit this week, guys. You take a hold of this one.
What about it?
Well, what do you mean? I can tell you what I'm gonna say about it, but what are you gonna say about it?
Okay, let's talk about Chris, the main character. Didn't you guys think it was really odd how it wasn't explained what the deal was with him needing light?
No, that was like a phobia. Was it legit? Like he actually like physically needed light, or
I think so.
I kind of felt like it was like what JP saying. I thought it was like a phobia.
Yeah, like an anxiety issue because
like the Citadel type shit.
But it was weird though because like I thought maybe that's what it was too, but. He says that at one point he's like, I need light. And he's like fucking profusely sweating, but he's almost sweating like goo and stuff at the same time.
Well, I think that also is that effects from the comet, though. Or like, there's a lot of stuff unexplained, you know?
Well, that's the thing. That's where these plot holes. I was going to say, was he affected by the previous comet when his parents died, and that's the way he is now? Or was it from the present comet that was making him how he was in those scenes where he's like, I need light, and he's passing out, and he's acting all weird and stuff? It wasn't explained, so I wasn't sure if it was because of this one that he was turning into a fucking alien.
Or maybe those comets were connected, and like the first comet caused the whole world to have something inside them, and then the second comet like reveals it. Who the fuck knows?
I think maybe he might have been turned into what he was previously, and then this comet kind of set it out, or kind of brought it out of him, or something like that.
Honestly, man, the story is not worth like trying to figure out.
But it is worth talking about, though.
It is worth talking about.
And just giving my thoughts. And that's kind of what I came down to. I thought maybe that, you know, what he was happened from before, and this one's bringing it out. That's why he keeps checking his stomach, and he's got like this nasty, like almost like burn mark thing on him. Fucking weird, man. It was such a weird film. Okay.
Yeah, it definitely feels like the script could have used another treatment.
Oh, big time. There's, like I said, the plot is completely flawed in this. But
reminded me of, dude, and I'm not sure if any of you two would be like too familiar with it, but like the post Resident Evil games, like the post Code Veronica, like the 5 and 4, and you know, like those ones, it really reminded me of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
That's an interesting.
Okay. One of the biggest problems I have with this movie is that not only is it 75 minutes long, I mean, that's not a problem. It's the fact that it takes about 40 minutes to get anything going in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
See, but the first, I actually enjoying the first half.
Yeah, same. I agree with you. I thought the first half was a lot better than the second half.
So did I. I actually will go on record and say that I actually enjoyed the character stuff more than the alien shit.
Yeah,
same. Well, I kind of agree with that, actually, because Once the alien stuff starts going down in like the last half an hour of the film, it's not very good.
No.
Yeah, that's right? When it gets like,
so I think that's
like,
what it is.
You get like the alien, the woman turning to like this fucking alien spider thing, you know.
That was great. I actually like that scene.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like,
man,
one of the more scenes that I liked.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was a little slow though. I mean, you know, for the first 40 minutes, I thought maybe
it was a bit slow.
A little bit. There was parts, but
I think that, like, I don't know, man. I was actually kind of digging the girl character when he like first met her. I was like, okay, I've seen this before, but I kind of like it a little bit. Like I like this, like this girl's personality.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds you of the artist in Maniac, the way she acted and shit. This one's just like, it's, I don't know, man. I don't really know.
I know. I like the baseball scenes when he's fucking beating the shit out of those people with baseball bats in each of his hands, and he's just fucking.
That's another interesting point, Jeremy, is that scene. Because remember, he like doesn't even realize that he did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kinda, like, wait,
was there some kind of twist that I didn't really pick up on or some shit?
It's like I said, the plot's just flawed. Like, you don't really know why. This is why he all of a sudden just lost all his memory, why this shit all went down and stuff. It's just flawed.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie, to me, it feels like a really kind of failed attempt at ripping off Night of the Comet.
You can tell that whoever made this film is a fan of things. Like the Escape from New York poster and the Jason little toy and games. Like, he probably was inspired by those Resident Evil games. He's probably a big
Nothing wrong with that, though.
No, but...
No, not at all.
But that has nothing to do with the
film. I found myself...
Yeah.
I found myself wanting to know what was in those DVD stacks.
Was you like looking and tilting your head like, I can't see anything?
Yeah, man, totally.
Yeah, I do that all the time, man.
I didn't really notice the first time I watched the film, but the second time it was like, it kind of really popped at me. But the scene where they're in his bedroom or whatever, him and the girl, and just the outside imagery, like how CG or how computer generated that was.
Mm-hmm.
Like pretty much all that was so generated, but like that scene in particular, though, it just looks so phony. It kind of bugged me the second time. Like, it didn't really bother me the first time because I didn't really, you know, give that too big
a
shit.
It bugged
me
that for being like a nerdy guy that this guy was supposed to be like all these chicks that were like talking to him.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's
right?
Like, bro, bro, what are you doing? What are you doing, dude? They're throwing themselves at you practically.
There's some fucking interesting moments in this film. Like, there's like a point in the film where they basically call Canadians idiots. I was like, wow, that's pretty funny. I wonder if anyone else caught on to that.
I don't think I did.
Yeah, and that was a kind of an interesting moment. I thought that was pretty funny, but you know, once again, you know, with the end of the film, I just found that like there wasn't a big enough build up to the for the climax and stuff of the film. Like it just kind of happens, then you're just like, oh. Okay.
Yeah, and you know what? I wanted to say that on Curse. The third act of Curse was like way fucking too long. Yeah. I've just thrown that in out there.
It's kind of random, but
I found this. Yeah, it's like here's the build up, and then shit starts going down outside, and there's some pretty decent scenes, and then all of a sudden it's just like, okay, we're done.
And the character that like you know he teams up with or whatever, that guy was not properly developed at all.
No, no, no. You don't know anything about him.
Yeah,
like okay, they had a lot
of issues with that.
But do you need to know anything about him?
A little bit.
One thing I would like to know is why, you know, when he basically saves Chris in the beginning of the film from those thugs, you know, like, why did he even give a shit? He's just like, leave him alone, you know, and then he pulls out this fucking huge machete. But these guys were kind of scared of Johnny, though. Uh-huh. So Johnny he's known, or they know who he is.
How do you even remember these character names, dude? Like, I
watched it twice, and there's only, like, four characters in the movie.
Yeah.
Which is funny. I can't remember the girl's name though right now, which is interesting.
Is it like Claire?
Yeah, Claire.
I
just remember Johnny's name because like his character was so funny to me. Like he was kind of mysterious in a way because he obviously had a reputation around there.
See, they did a good job character development with him because you know he's playing his game. He's working at like a teleperformance thing or whatever. You know. Mm-hmm. I like that scene, you know? It kind of set him up, like, who we're dealing with here. I like that scene in the liquor store where the girl was talking about, like, all, like, you know, beer and wine and liquor and shit. Like, I like that scene. That was pretty cool.
And, of course, this movie has your doom and gloom character, the homeless guy who's kind of ranting and raving about the fucking...
That is the doomsayer / Crazy Ralph
character. Yeah, that's totally Crazy Ralph. And it was kind of cliched, and you're just like, oh, yep, there's Crazy Ralph.
Which I am 100% fine with. I like the Crazy Ralph characters.
Yeah, but I mean, actually, this guy was kind of funny. Like, he's like totally freaking out. My favorite part in that scene, though, is actually the store owner. He's just like completely like, get the fuck out of here. Like the whole time, he's like, dude, shut up. He's like, you're bothering the customers, man. It's like his reaction to it. He's just like, get out of here. It's like an everyday thing with him, right? Oh, that was kind of funny. But, yeah, I don't know, man. I this movie to me didn't have any atmosphere whatsoever.
Well, that's kind of funny. It did not scream that it was a Scream Factory film. Like, do you think it's the worst Scream Factory film release, film wise?
Out of the original films, out of these new kind of like chiller / whoever put this one out and stuff.
Yeah.
So far, I think this is probably my least favorite.
Yeah, let's think the same thing.
Yeah, see, I've only seen Beneath, so I definitely like Beneath a lot more than this.
You see Chilling Visions. That movie's good.
Yeah, Chilling Visions. Then there was.
I'm looking forward to Monkey's Paw, to be honest, but.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that too. So you guys have anything else to say about? Am I missing anything on this one?
You know, I think the main thing, is just that the script needed more attention and needed a rewrite. And
yeah, this movie definitely suffered hardcore from a
really... Do you know who wrote it? Did the guy who directed it write it also?
No, it was a different writer. But it was his first movie that he's ever written too, so...
Vincent. Yeah, see, there's definitely some issues with that. Probably needed a rewrite it too.
At least it had a good soundtrack. Like, the soundtrack was really good.
You can tell that there was a movie in here. Like,
yeah.
Like there was some potential. Like, I know they were trying to do, like, some, like, thing. It was like almost like a thing, you know, like a Carpenter's thing. You could probably tell that the guy, you know, based on the Carpenter poster in the room, probably is a big fan of the Thing also.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that was the scene I was going to talk about. You know the scene where Chris is walking in the streets there? And he comes across a father and son that are trying to, you know, locate the comet with their telescope or whatever. And then Chris does. He helps him out, and he finds, he gets, you know, it all locked in for them and stuff. I thought that scene was way too long, man.
Yeah.
Like, it just goes on and on, and I'm like, oh my god, this is so awkward. Like, I understand
yeah,
what they were
you
trying
know what?
To do in that scene. Because, good, you know, with good, father and son, point. He doesn't have his father. But I totally understand where they're coming from. But it was way too long and drawn out.
Just not like, handled properly. And I think that yeah. is the message of the day. Like, that's the main thing. It's just the guy who made the filmmakers were just too much of amateurs to really tackle a mm-hmm. film like this, you know? And yeah. there's just too much that you can just tell it's just little mistakes, like amateur stuff the problems. That's the main problems of the film.
Hey, JP, I kind of have just a random question. Is Beneath the Mississippi really 115 minutes long?
I don't know. I watched the whole thing, but I watched it in like 10-minute segments.
Yeah, I'm watching.
I had
look,
to pause it and like do
I'm
something
like,
else.
I was like curious about it, so I looked, and it fucking says it's 114 minutes long.
Jesus, man.
it wouldn't surprise me because, you know, people – that's a big fucking problem is people can't stand to cut their art at all. It's like, no. They can't see it from, like, a different point of view. They need to have friends that are willing to tell them, like, hey, dude, this shit is way too long.
Well, they obviously didn't go to film school because that's, like, the one thing you do in film school.
It's the one, like, biggest pet peeve I have is, like, when people make their films too long.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I may have to check this movie out to see how bad it really is.
Go ahead and try.
All right.
You won't make it through.
Hey, guys, what do you figure ratings? Who wants to go on that one for Dead Shadows?
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10. A little below recommendation.
I gave it a 5.5. I've seen worse.
Yeah, I've seen worse, too.
It's slightly above average for me.
That's exactly what I gave it, 5.5. Yeah. 5.5 out of 10. Yeah, I mean, like I said, there was, you know,
there's music
for me
there,
got a lot
man.
Of points.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
I got
that,
a lot of points.
Was a big help.
Yeah, but uh-huh. I mean, it's just a super flawed film. But you know, there's a lot of potential here. You know, I will say, I would definitely, you know, stray away from using really, really bad CGI cocks in your film.
Yeah, watch the... Because
that's like the first moment that something happens in the movie.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, what? Wait, I actually rewound it. I was like, was that a penis?
If you want to know how to do cocks, watch The Taint. That's all you have to do. That's all you have to do.
That, it's an interesting thing that or how they did that too in the film because, you know, they CGI'd this terrible looking alien cock that ends up busting through this chick's fucking mouth. It's just like so funny. But so then it goes from like a really bad scene full of, you know, terrible CGI. And the very next scene is the girl that melts.
Yeah.
I'm
like, that
should have did the melting scene first, man.
Exactly what I said. I said they should have done that. I even thought that to myself. I'm like, they should have done the melting girl scene first and then thrown, because when I first seen that CGI'd alien cock, I was like, fucking kidding me.
Did you rewind it? I totally rewound it. I was like, was that what I thought it was?
I didn't rewind it, but I ended up watching this film twice, so so that was kind of like a rewind.
I can't believe you watched this twice.
Well, because I got this, you know, when I got
this. Yeah, I know. By the way, this wasn't supposed to be a review. We was actually supposed to do Gutter Balls and Hanger. But my copy of Gutter Balls was thrashed to death.
Yeah, I wouldn't have watched this movie when I first got it if we already had it on, you know, the itinerary. So,
which I believe we are going to cover these, like, Scream Factory new films, like the new ones.
Yeah, I think every time they put out one, we'll definitely do it. So,
yeah.
All right, any other thoughts, fellas?
Nope.
Worst movie ever made sucks.
Next week's question, top 5 post-2000
vampire
films. Make your list, and hopefully I won't miss
them.
I
want to shoot you a few ideas for those top 5s maybe you haven't thought of.
I have about 400 on here already, but you can pull it. Yep.
Like now or later?
No, not now.
All right. Okay. All right. So thank you, everybody, for listening to the 19th episode of 22 Shots of Moods and Horror Podcast. Next week, we'll be coming back with the Big 2-0, and we'll be doing the Viewer Choice Show. We'll be picking 3 films that you guys recommended to us. We all picked 1 film from all the recommendations, and we're going to be reviewing those 3 films. I guess I won't tell you guys what the films are until next week.
We actually should tell them.
So yeah, we should.
All right. It's The Tripper.
What did you pick? You picked The Tripper.
I picked The Tripper because that movie's fucking David Arquette.
I picked Pieces. And he just cuz.
And I pick Calvary.
Yeah, so Adrian should be happy with JP's choice for sure. So stay tuned to next week's show. It should be a fun and interesting show. Are we going to be doing the what we watched next week and stuff like that, guys?
Probably not. Maybe pick of the week.
All right, okay. So then we'll be coming back for that. So stay tuned to that. If you guys want to follow me on my channel, you can do so at youtube.com/NESRuler22. If you want to follow JP over at his channel, aka the man who still hates Pee Wee Herman, you can follow him and his channel at youtube.com/DoubleShotJ. If you want to follow the man Moods himself, click the subscribe button down below. Or if you're watching on the devilseyes.com or listening to it to us on iTunes, youtube.com/Mood616.
Oh, also, we should start throwing this out at the beginning, but if you want your comments for shortly seen, your top five list, shoot us an email because I check that daily.
Yeah.
22shotsofmoodsandhorror@gmail.com. Also, Twitter, 22 Shots Podcast. It's not 22 Shots Horror. We actually almost have like 100 followers on there, I think.
Damn, that's more than I have.
Yeah. But I think there might be some fake ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. It just exploded one day. It was like 30 to 100.
I guess we all know who that is fucking trolling us. Matt87 Rider. Anyway, hope everybody has a good week. I'll talk to you guys again next week.
Peace.
20th episode of 22 Shots of Moods and Horror. Everyone have a good week.